meeting with ESCOM this morning. Just for the record, I know the red list indicates that the meeting is a joint meeting. That's not the case. The updated red list, this is purely a SCOPA meeting, but members of the PC on public enterprises are here as the Honorable Swartz, and any other member will be interested will be here. So this is purely a SCOPA meeting. It's no train smash in any case, because we are exchanging notes with the PC. And in any case, the focus of today is on the oversight visit of SCOPA on the 26th to the 30th of October to Medupi and Kusile, and with a particular focus on the the recommendations contained therein. So the report was adopted late November, early December, and of course there are timelines which are contained therein. We did send the report through to ESCOM ourselves. I'm pretty certain the PLOs would have picked it up as well, and subsequently the speaker herself has advised the department of the report. So the report is still is very much within the timelines, and I raise this because some tried to trigger a technicality that ESCOM can only start acting on the report only when the speaker has actually sent it. From our side, that's not the case, but nonetheless, the speaker herself has endorsed us forwarding it to ESCOM, so we are well within the parameters of operation. So we welcome the ESCOM team this morning. I'm hopefully going to have a very productive and frank meeting. I know that there's issue colleagues with the report. It arrived yesterday in the afternoon, and we have received it this morning. I am going to ask that we will deal with that from our side. And so when ESCOM goes through their presentation, they will adopt a Hambakahle approach. So they will engage in a stage 8 patients and make sure that we capture everything. Because quite frankly, the report, the presentation is about the report that was passed. So I would really ask us to move with speed in that regard. We will deal with it, colleagues, I know, so that we focus on the big issue. My request, colleagues, is that at the end of the meeting, can we have a five-minute committee caucus to tie down on a matter related to tomorrow's meeting with SAA? So I would request that we just at the end we have a five-minute committee caucus to tie down on that. CEO, welcome. I hope that the team has taken you through on your arrival on some of the interactions of SCOPA and ESCOM. And from our side, to reiterate to ESCOM, but to inform you specifically that ESCOM remains a key priority focus area for this committee. We are concerned not just about load shedding, because in our view, load shedding is as a consequence of serious management issues, operational issues at ESCOM. The lack of consequence management, the total refusal by certain quarters of ESCOM to be vetted as they should. Medupi and Kusile continue to be a continuous strain on the fiscus with unprecedented escalations in costs for the construction, and it is our expectation, as the report says, that the projects be finished within the new budget and within the time frames that have been stipulated. We are not going to accept any other changes and any further goal shifting of targets and goals and commitments. Our expectation is that you are committed to your own commitments. This is your budget. These are your timelines. All we are saying is that they must not change and should not change. Eskom, in our view, notwithstanding what the president has said in SONA and probably the new policy directions that will be taken, remains the backbone of this economy. And if Eskom is in the kind of disarray which currently characterizes it, we've got every reason to be concerned. The inconveniences of load shedding are unimaginable. So let me, in welcoming you, CEO, to say, we will only support you if you do the right thing. And so our support is very conditional. And it is our sole expectation that things turn around. The public cannot afford the kind of chaos that currently prevails in South Africa simply because there's load shedding. It's a serious indictment that we are dealing with load shedding from 2008. It speaks to an inability to manage. It's a failure to manage, to put it frankly. So things must change, and we there's no room on our side or appetite for excuses any longer. And so the timelines as contained in the report, we are very strict to those. And we expect that we will be receiving the reports as and when they are required. So on that note, on behalf of the committee, we welcome the Eskom team. We will take apologies, and then we'll ask the Eskom team to introduce themselves. Right, I see a hand, Honorable Hadebe.
Thank you, Chair. I am seriously concerned or crippled in that we only receive a report now, which is a feedback report that ought to have guided our participation and engagement for today. I am not in fact I'm a slow learner. I take time to process things. I would have preferred if this report, at least even the latest, was last night. Now, I'm not too sure how are we going to be effective and productive in engaging with Eskom if they only present a report to us now. The question that will then follow, when did Eskom become aware that they will be appearing before us? And why are we getting a report now? I don't want to have assumption that it was it's a deliberate attempt on their side to limit our engagement and participation with them. No. I'm a very slow learner. I take time to process things, Chair. I need to read a document more than once for me to be able to apply my mind on it.
All right.
And I don't think
I've captured you.
Now.
I've captured you. The report was sent by Eskom yesterday in the afternoon. I am advised that in between then and this morning there was a technical glitch on our side. But Eskom had sent the report yesterday, and the correspondence to Eskom to appear for this report was sent last week. And so that is why I am saying I crave the indulgence of members and their patience, and that is why I am asking Eskom to exercise stage age patience when they present, so that members can have the time to actually interact with the report. So the technical glitch happened on our side. I've interacted with our team, and the technical glitch was on our side. So So Eskom had sent the report timely. So I request that we continue with the meeting. Please, we will deal with this in our committee meeting as COPA. But insofar as Eskom is concerned, I don't think this is a discussion we should have with them here. They complied insofar as submission.
No, I hear you, Chair. I think then you should expect load shedding from our side in engaging with the report.
No, let's not be pessimistic. Let's juxtapose the presentation by ESCOM to our committee report that was adopted. I plead with you, colleagues. Deputy Minister, good morning and welcome. We were just about to start. We were finalizing on housekeeping rules. Engagement. So if I may request that we hand over to the Department of Public Enterprise team and ESCOM, and then we will be taken through the presentation which appears. I hope members have received hard copies as well. All right. Deputy Minister, over to you and ESCOM.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Greetings to the Honourable members of the committee. Apologies for coming a bit late. I hope the apology was conveyed. Today is really the occasion for feedback insofar as the committee had visited. So without much ado, the team is here from ESCOM. They will then dispense with giving that feedback, after which we would then engage. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Colleagues, so as we said, I just want to summarize our report as follows. That the recommendations which we had made, one, the vetting of all employees was due to be done in December, or 60 days after the adoption of the report in question by the House. The take-and-pay system was supposed to be revisited and the report to be submitted to SCOPA 60 days after the submission of the adoption of the report. Way bridges and offloading facilities were to be constructed in Musile. Negotiations were started and SCOPA would be updated on the negotiations for the development of the adjacent new Largo coal field. It must be fast-tracked and concluded without further delay. And a monthly executive summary on progress in regards was to be submitted to SCOPA. And quarterly reports on investigations and consequence management was to be sent. And of course, we would like an update on what is due in about 6 weeks' time, the investigations, because we had said those must be due by the 31st of March. And then on issues of declarations and the capacity of internal audit, including but not limited to all these matters. So I think that's the scope for today. And then if there are other matters that you feel that we should be appraised of, please advise. So, CEO, if you can have your team introduced so we know who's who, and then we will take it from there.
Honourable Chair, thank you very much for that warm welcome. We appreciate the opportunity to give feedback to SCOPA this morning on the oversight visits conducted by SCOPA during the course of last year to Madupi and Kusile. First of all, I would like to apologize for the gender imbalance of my team. It's something that we are very aware of, and we seek to address that. I'm not sure which one of them is going to be changed, but they might be changed going forward. We'll talk about the nature of the changes later on. We will be dealing with the report in six sections. If you can just move on to the following slide. So we will give you an overview, which I will handle. Then, as far as procurement and contract management is concerned, our Chief Procurement Officer, Mr. Solly Chintongano, is here. He will deal with that section. On governance and internal investigations, Mr. Bartlett Hewu, who is the Interim Group Executive for Legal and Compliance, next to me, he will deal with that. Beki Nkumalo, who is the Group Executive for Generation, at Eskom will deal with the new build projects at Medupi and Kwesile. On coal and coal supply issues, we've got Mr. Dan Mashego, who is the General Manager for Primary Energy at Eskom. And then we also have in attendance today Mapelo Mbulwa, who is the Manager of Parliamentary Affairs, as well as Nombini Matumelo, who is the Eskom Parliamentary Liaison Officer. So that's the Eskom team, Chair, and the agenda.
All right. Board representation?
Chair, the having regard to the fact that the oversight visit was conducted by executives at the time, officials of Eskom, the Chair sent his apologies and he has asked to be excused from this meeting.
No. See you. At the conclusion of that oversight, we met with the board and management. The accounting authority is the board. It's unacceptable that the board is not here. Whatever considerations may have been given, they should have been communicated to myself prior, not to make a decision to the point that you implemented without consulting us. Quite frankly, I think it's a dereliction of duty and responsibility on the part of the board. It's common cause that if you are to appear here, the accounting authority should be here. If the ministry can be here and management can be here, the board has got certainly no excuse to be here. I don't accept, actually, that I don't know. It's not acceptable, in fact. It's not. Because if the rationale that was given was that because the oversight was attended by executives. So what do they make of the status of the meeting that we had with the board at the conclusion of the meeting? They did not consider that to be part and parcel of the oversight. I consider the action of the board actually to be one of undermining this committee. It's not acceptable at all. And as I'm saying, for the record, colleagues, I've received no correspondence from the board. Because even prior, I asked Mr. Kali here to, I asked him, have you where's the board? And he said, we'll await to hear from ESCO. Right, Honorable Somyo, Honorable Hade, and Honorable Mende. Let's see if you can test your mic, please. Thanks. Right.
No, Chair. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, the Deputy Minister, the team of ESCOM. Yes, it is true that the board's assertion, if that is the board's assertion, it's totally wrong. And it's not acceptable. We signed off the visit by meeting the chair of the board who chaired the meeting and other board members who were present, and therefore the actual oversight visit was not exclusive, and it included the board itself. So the board must remain accountable. That's why we have made this sort of an invite. So it's really not acceptable that the board is not here. I really agree with you, the chair.
No, thanks, Chair. I'm covered. I'm interested also in finding out, was it only the, you said the Chair that tendered the apology?
Well, let me put it this way. There is no apology that we have received. It's only what the CEO has said, that the Chair. But from seated here and having inquired, there is no.
So in essence, there was no confusion in terms of attendance to this meeting. Someone took a conscious decision not to attend. Yes. That's what I'm trying to ascertain here from the CFO. I mean, CEO. Can I just get that clarity, that there was no confusion in terms of who should be here? There was a conscious decision not to attend, so that we know what we're dealing with.
I'll hand over to the maybe let CEO. Let me let the members finish, and then you can respond to all the matters. Total honourable member. So we'll note that question, honourable member.
Chair, can you please allow them to respond on the clarification in terms of understanding who was supposed to be here?
All right. CEO.
Honourable Chair, thanks for the questions. The interim chairperson informed me yesterday that he had elected not to attend, and that is where the matter ended. I had no further interaction with any other board member on the matter.
All right. Okay. Honourable Mage.
No, just a follow-up.
Honourable Hadeb and then Honourable Mende. All right, Honourable Swart.
So there was no explanation as to why he opted not to attend, and you did not even...
Well, let us...
No, I'm trying to understand the logic behind a board, an accounting officer.
But the board is not here. The CEO says the chair elected not to attend, and that's where the matter ended.
And so it ended there, Chair?
No,
right.
It doesn't end there. Any further probing can't be here with these individuals, management, because the board has, for all intents and purposes, told us to go and jump off the nearest cliff. That's what this action indicates. Right, Honorable Mente, so that we can tie this down properly. Honorable Mente.
Thank you, Chair. The first thing is I'm not comfortable with the response that he elected not to come. Was he aware that he should be here? That's the first thing. And then secondly, if he was aware that he should be here, then he received the wrong job description. Because he is an ultimate accounting authority of ESCO. So if he read his job description correctly, whether he started yesterday or a second ago, he immediately assumes a position of a chair and all the responsibilities of his predecessor. So, Deputy Minister, if the chair understands his job description, he's going to write an apology to Parliament. That should be the first assignment. He must write an apology to Parliament. He's not going to undermine us like that. He's not going to say because he was not part and parcel of ESCOM at the time, and therefore he's excused. You don't get to elect when to come. You don't divorce yourself from your responsibility. If he's going to divorce himself from his responsibility, he must divorce himself from ESCOM altogether and the salary and perks of ESCOM. We're not going to accept it.
Okay. Honorable Swart, Deputy Minister, I'm going to... Let's hear the members. That's what I was trying to gear to earlier on. Let's hear the members. Members, can if we can be brief so we can map out a way forward. All right, Honourable Swartz.
Chair,
Honourable,
thank you
Lee.
For the opportunity.
and then Honourable Lisa, yourself. Yes, you are.
After
there's a family confusion here. Ladies first, and then we'll come to you. All right, Honourable Lisa, you are next.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, this ESCOM board chair is telling us to go and jump into the nearest river, because if he's able to tell the CEO that I'm not going and it ends there, that's a very lame excuse. And two, maybe, Chair, we should not make people used to this thing that at Scopa we give time frames, we do what? The CEO must go out, call the chair, call the chair, so that when we leave here, his apology has reached to chairperson. So that in his apology we really understand why the board is not here. Because if the accounting officer is not here, the people that are here, even if he started at Eskom yesterday, he is supposed to be here. So that he understands what we want as the committee and what we want to achieve in terms of getting responses from Eskom. Deputy Minister, I really think that these people don't respect us. Chair, they must give us an apology today before we leave here. He must write it, because an email is a click of a button. Because if the CEO is saying that he chose not to come and it ends there, ugus tele lunch, guti jump into the nearest river.
All right, Honorable Liz.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I think there's general consensus about the disappointment in the board not being represented here today, and Honorable Schwartz is indicating a way forward. I was going to indicate that you write a formal letter to the chair of the board requesting an explanation for the non-attendance, and then we can get on with the real business of the day, which really is the crisis that Eskom finds itself in.
All right, Honorable Schwartz, and then we will...
Thank you, Chair. I join and your sentiments. I support your sentiments, particularly relating to the board being the accounting officer. So it is very regrettable, but I do support the recommendation. I was going to say, write a letter, ask for an explanation, and ask for an apology as to non-appearance today, and I think that is the way forward so that we can get to the heart of why we are here today. Thank you, Chair.
All right, Honorable Samia, the last one.
Well, Chair, let's probably separate the two. Currently, there's no apology. So we can't be asking for an apology.
Yes.
What we must take note of is the fact that the board has somewhat acted in this instance in derelict, dereliction of a responsibility. And if that is the case, then the letter you write is the letter that captures that spirit. But we must continue with the business of the day, because we want to establish whether indeed when we went there and we made the findings, have those findings acted upon as referred to the institution. We are dealing with an institution which is at the heart of the nation, and therefore our responsibility is the establishment of whether they really understand that fact. And so far, the absence of the board is sailing closer to something away from that fact. So let's make it stronger. While we appreciate that the CEO and his team are here, and they've made it that they are here, the ministry is represented here, but we are not taking kindly that the board, which is a responsible accounting authority of that institution, absence itself in this very important meeting to account to the Committee of Parliament.
All right. Colleagues, thank you. I will hand over to the Deputy Minister. The bottom line is this, Deputies, before you respond. The issue is the action of the board is reckless, irresponsible, and careless, and inconsistent with them meeting their fiduciary responsibilities, including but not limited to accounting to Parliament. I'm certainly not going to go and dig for an apology. The board saw it fit not to apologize. What we'll want is an explanation as to why they are not here. Ordinarily, my recommendation is that if we are consistent with our own standard operating procedure here, the committee would have sent this delegation packing, because there is no accounting authority present. However, given the seriousness of the issues, in so far as the explanations that we require, we will proceed with the meeting, hear the presentation, however, understanding that there is still a missing link, and that link is the board. Why I'm of that outlook, colleagues, is that you see, interim boards are a problem. Because people are walking on eggshells on interim boards because they want to be appointed permanently. It's like when you're in an acting position, they sort of adopt this hambagatli approach because please appoint me permanently at a later stage. So I think as part of our recommendations, we will hear the explanation of the board, and when we do the report of the committee on this hearing, we will make a determination on our own observation and outlook and interpretation of what the board is like. But for me, any board that does not take Parliament seriously is not fit and proper to be in office. And so I think DM, there is an urgency in appointing a permanent board so that we deal with this impasse. CEO, we've noted what you have said insofar as the chairman of the board, but the chairman himself is not the alpha and omega of oversight. It's the board as a collective. And the fact that there is no board representative is a problem. And of course, the fact that we are hinging on the outlook of what the chairman has said raises serious concerns on my part. But, colleagues, I would impress on you that we continue to with the meeting and hear the presentation, and there are issues, we'll raise them. And I think the final point here is the absence of the board itself is indicative of the problem generally at ESCOM. So it continues to shed further light on what we are dealing with. So can I impress on you, colleagues, understanding that this is an exception and not a norm under the circumstances, given the seriousness of the issues at ESCOM. So, Deputy Minister, can I get reaction from you? Because ODM is part of us now, he knows if your phone rings, it's 100 rands. So as part of our fundraising efforts. Right, DM, over to you.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. My apologies again. Without muddying the waters any further, I became aware that I was going to attend this meeting yesterday. And
can I implore you, DM, that they turn this mic on for you? That one has been having issues with the CEO's mic. I don't know, whichever one will be convenient.
Thank you, Chair. Certainly the committee is owed an explanation that I concur with the honourable members. Yesterday, when I became aware I was going to be attending the meeting, I had a checklist of things. Given my appreciation of the modus operandi of the committee. On attendance, it was whether there is going to be board representation as well as the senior management. I got a thumbs up yesterday. So that is this turn of events. It's something that calls for some investigation of a kind just to ascertain as to exactly what has happened. Whereafter we revert back to the committee as to what truly happened. I'm just as disappointed because yesterday I made an effort to have the understanding that we shall have a representation that is beyond question insofar as the accounting responsibility. So it's something that we'll revert back to the chair about upon the investigation. Thank you.
That does matter. Colleagues, just for the record, and then we will hand over to ESCOM so that there is no doubt insofar as our own preparedness this side. The letter left on the 11th of February so that there's clarity. There was no last minute on our part. An issue was picked up with the letter. I subsequently corrected it again within 24 hours. So there was ample one. It was even before SONA that this correspondence left. So there's no doubt on our minds. I know my colleagues are going to accept the way forward that I've presented. All right? No. Yeah. All right. But what I can assure you, DMCO, see, I know these colleagues. I can read their faces. Ordinarily, we should be sending you packet, so that there's no doubt in future. No board, no accounting, don't even bother coming here. And it must be communicated to the board. That of the DM has said, we are picking up this tendency, this trend you must undermine. And we're going to deal with it. Ask the PRASA board. We are pursuing action to deal with them so that they never feature anywhere else. You can't come to Parliament and want Parliament's money and the public's money and we bail you out day in and day out. Then when you have to account, you show us the middle finger. Because this is what this action amounts to. So as far as I'm concerned, that board is not fit and proper and not fit for purpose. Right? See, over to you along the lines you have mapped out of the the persons who will respond, and then we will take it from there. Right. Colleagues, you've all got hard copies. There are members of the PC on public enterprises. Have they all been taken care of? All right. CEO, over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. If I can start with an overview, since Eskom's last visit to Parliament. We remain grateful for the support that we are receiving from the fiscus. There is still an urgent need for us to restructure the 450 billion rand of debt that Eskom is owing, which causes us to have gross debt service obligations of over 70 billion rand per annum. We are driving to improve our internal efficiencies to manage our costs down within the constraints that we face. We have reprioritized our capital expenditure. We are reintroducing a far more disciplined approach to capital allocation, and we have identified the procurement of goods and services as a major lever for unlocking savings. We are aggressively continuing to pursue enhanced revenue collection from municipalities that have not been paying, as well as from the residents of Soweto in particular, and we are seeing an improvement from historic rates of about 12% payment rates in Soweto to just under 25% today. So that is an improvement, and it coincides with the President's call to pay for services. We have communicated to the public that we are introducing a change in our approach to maintenance. We are going to be reverting to maintaining our generation assets in particular as per the requirements of the original equipment manufacturers, very much along the lines as you would service a car. And that unfortunately increases the likelihood of some load shedding over the next 18 months as we repair our assets. But after that, we should be in a position to supply electricity reliably and sustainably going forward. We also have the two major new build projects that you visited, Madupi and Kusile, and we are focusing on correcting these new build units and also managing coal quality and coal supply. Bartlett will give you more information on our efforts to step up and collect money that was misappropriated. We have recently announced that we are going to be extending lifestyle audits to the lower levels of the organization as well, and we are very much seized with the matter to bring those who have misappropriated funds to book. And we have seen the arrest of two former executives of Eskom in that regard at the end of last year. There's also structural changes ongoing in Eskom, as you will have heard the president in Sona speak about the process of divisionalizing Eskom into three different entities. We believe that this approach will put us in a position where we are able to operate Eskom in a more business-focused manner, push down accountability to where it belongs, and ensure that we are able to accommodate the requirements of a changing electricity market in South Africa. If I can move on to the next slide, the decision that we've made and for which we have received board endorsement is that we will not compromise on maintenance going forward. So we have to live up to the requirements of our system, and this is a key element of returning our generation system to a more predictable state. We, in that process, are engaging with National Treasury to become more agile in our procurement, to ensure that we can still operate within the constraints of the PFMA, but that we have appropriate commercial and technical outcomes for the procurement that we do undertake. This will require us to contract with original equipment manufacturers and also reputable and specialized companies with a long-term partnership approach. We will continue to operate units at Indrina, Camden and Grootvlei beyond their previously appointed shutdown dates to provide backup capacity. We're also embarking on a project to address vacuum load losses at Matimba Power Station near Lephalale, and this is the potential to unlock some 500, and there's an error on the slide, it should be 500 gigawatt hours per annum, so that's a very significant upside that we are pursuing. We have received a special dispensation to recruit externally, so this is a relaxation of our recruitment freeze in order to obtain critical skills and experience, and we will be revisiting existing coal supply agreements to make sure that we pay a reasonable price and that we receive the quality and quantity that we have contracted for. And then, obviously, lastly, we will continue with the 9-point recovery plan. So, as Mr. Nkumalo will state later on, generation will continue to improve the defects that currently exist at Medupi and Kusile. We will invest in the life extension of Indrina and Grootvlei. We will implement a 5-year plan, technical plan, and a life of plant plan. And we will start with doing maintenance on units totaling 3,200 megawatts. Coal quality remains a key focus area of ours, and also improving coal handling facilities, in particular moving more coal from our roads onto railway trucks and also conveyor belts as a way of securing supply. And then we will also prioritize the refurbishment to improve the availability of the following power stations, and they are listed there, so I won't go through them. But the remainder of the stations will be maintained under normal maintenance, and with normal maintenance, I mean the regular prescribed maintenance. So we will not leave out any prescribed maintenance intervals in order to save cost, but we will also not be investing significantly in new capital for those plants, considering that they are due to be retired in the next 5 years. With that, Honourable Chair, with your permission, I would like to hand over to my colleague, our Chief Procurement Officer, Mr. Solly Chitangana. Right.
Just your mic, CEO. Thank you. Thanks, Chair. The challenges that we are addressing, which was the main key, was the contracts that expire and are not replaced on time, which leads to procurement through deviations and single source procurements, which are the source of problems in ESCO. Since the visit, we have put more measures to improve the planning and to ensure that those contracts that are expiring, divisional heads are given reports quarterly and are expected to sign off to ensure that those contracts that are going to expire and they don't need them, we are not going to re-advertise them, but those contracts that are expiring and they still need them, then we're able to advertise them on time, and we reduce also the turnaround time to be able to deal with the bid processes. If you check the reports that will be coming from National Treasury on deviations and the modifications, you'll see that if you check the trend from the previous financial years, 2017-18, 18-19, and the current year, the number of deviations or procurement through deviations and the single source procurements are coming down. One of the critical areas that we are busy with, which we have already discussed with the GCE, is the absence of controls in our SEP system, which prevent us from identifying some of the gaps that we should be able to identify before. For example, you'll find that if an item has been procured at one power station or region, we should be able to tell that this is the market price that we should pay for this item. But because of the lack of those functional controls, then you'll find that one region or one procurement center will procure an item for 50 rand and the same item may be procured by another procurement center for 100 rand or 150 rand. Those are the controls that we are busy with. One area that was also a problem, which we think that when the divisionalizations also come, will be able to assist, is the improvement in the planning processes. You'll find that the planning processes will be top-bottom. Otherwise, those users and the divisionals will not be involved in putting together a proper procurement plan. But that's what we are starting to address now, which we hope that it will be able to. When you move, you'll see the graphs where we are just showing you that these numbers are coming down, these numbers
but
are coming down.
I requested that you exercise stage 8 patients. So we need to know where you are.
Page.
Yeah, so
let's
can move
go to page 9 of the... of the slide, you'll see what we are showing you there, that in the current financial year, we have already put together around 1,536 contracts. And if you look at the graph will show you the divisions into the single source contracts that we have placed, and the open market ones, and the sole source. Single source. Procurement are those procurement where when you test the market, you'll see that there are more than one supplier who can provide you with that service. But there are situations where you'll be forced to use that single source. I'll give you an example. If you have a disciplinary case and you appoint a lawyer, the employee is dismissed, and the matter is taken to the CCMA or is taken to the labor court, you can go and procure another legal company to come in and assist you. In those cases, you will need to motivate to use single source procurement so that because there's continuity of the work that has been done previously. Then you will have the sole source which is indicated there. In case of sole source, you should be the only one who can be able to distribute this service or who could be able to render such services. Otherwise, if there's no evidence of that, we shouldn't use sole source as a mode of procurement. If you look at the next slide, which is 10, it will be showing you those numbers that I was talking about, where you will see you'll have the previous 55 expansions, and then you'll see the numbers coming down to 37. You'll have the 133, the numbers coming down to 53. Then you'll have the 193, the numbers coming to 59. Those are the, through the measures that we have put, you'll see that those numbers are coming down. Even with the next slide, it's the same continuation to say we are showing the expansion, how the numbers were previously, and how the numbers are coming down now, which is our plan to ensure that we reduce the expansions. Expansions mainly is when you have a contract and the work has been done but is not yet completed, then you need to continue completing, then they will come and motivate for expansions. Which, when Bartlett gives the report, most of the cases that we have that are investigated by SIU, the majority of them, they were as a result of these expansions which were done irregularly, and after they have been done, then you see that that's where now corruption comes, with the appointment of subcontractors, not following competitive bidding. In most of the cases that he will be talking about, OABB and Kubula and the like, the source of this corruption was as a result of modifying contracts. Even the GC, after he has arrived, we have already dealt with a number of modifications that are in place. I'll give you an example. The last board meeting where I attended, we were dealing with a number of them. You'll find that their contracts, for example, that commenced in 2005, and these contracts were at 100 million each. From 2005, in 2007, those contracts were modified by billion. The other one was from 100 million, it was modified by 1.3 billion. Then it went to 1.4. In 2017, the officials went to the board, for example, and they wanted another modification of 350 million. But when they were requesting that, between 2007 and 2017, you find that there was 4 billion that was modified in that contract without following any process.
All right, let's specify what this contract is. Let's not speak about it in hypothetical terms.
This contract is a consulting contract in between Medupi and Kusile, and the names of the suppliers in this case, it would be PB Africa, and then you will have Black and Fish. If you check today, those contracts that commenced in 2005, for example, you'll find that the combined value now is more than 20 billion for the work that was being done, monitoring or project management at Medupi and Kusile. But the board will say, even because you only want the extension of time now, you don't want any extension or modification of value, but what we want you, CPO and the team, is that we want all the modifications that were done, for example, between 2007 to now, that we must launch an investigation so that we establish what happened. because when you look at some of those modifications, especially at Medupi and Psile, either they will abuse the use of contingents or they'll just add additional scope. Sometimes they scope work from one supplier and it's given to another supplier and without any competition. And when you have been given that work free of charge, what happens is that now you are told subcontract make, subcontract butlet. And out of that, corruption comes in. If you have read the reports previously when the other guys were arrested, that's what the modus operandi that was being used. In the next slide, we are just showing you the same trend that we're talking about, because you will have the expansions, you will have the deviations. You'll see, according to us, the numbers are coming down because procurement through deviations and expansion, it was now a norm in ESCOM. And it's a very difficult to remove people from that culture, especially when you, for example, you'll see that we had Pakamani. When Pakamani left, you have Javo, now you have Andre. You'll find that some of the modifications that you would have rejected through the other one, when the new one comes, that modification comes because they want to convince the new guy to say, hey, maybe the procurements were right. Currently, I'm sitting some of the modifications that we rejected in July 2019. But because there's a new CEO, you'll see all these things again coming.
Who's bringing these modifications via the back door?
They'll be coming from...
Let's speak in specific terms.
They'll be coming from divisions. You remember we are commercial. We are sitting. And I was just giving an example, but if you want... those names, we can give their names.
Wait, there's a point of order.
Chairperson, we have tried to exercise the stage 8 patience. Mr. Chikutangano knows very well how this committee works. Now we must dig for details. This is a summary. There's no detail of anything from the first page. When you talk to deviation, is deviation A, you're procuring coal. Who made the deviation? What happened? Why was it rejected?
Right.
He is now talking to the report. We don't have that detail. How do we then talk to it? How do we interrogate it? Because the next question becomes, if these things were wrong, he said, you are asking a question, who is bringing it? The next page is going to be, what happened to the people who are continuously bringing or procuring on a wrong format? I don't think we can be we can have any successful interrogation of this report.
Right, let's do this. Mr. Chitangano, on slide 11, you say ESCOM submitted 55 expansions, and then you break them down. On slide 12, you say you submitted 37 deviations, and then you break them down. So when you finish your section, please pull out that information, because it should all be ordinarily be readily available, and we'll go through it. Because you would not have arrived at those numbers if you did not have a record of them.
Correct, Chair. We have them. You remember with the deviations, with the modifications, whatever we say, when Treasury submit the report, they will be having. But if you want us to... We thought today it won't be a day of dealing with all each, but we will make submission of all the things that we're talking about.
Don't muddy the waters. When I follow the outlook I'm giving, pull it out. We will decide here how we want to deal with it. So you should have it.
Yes, sir, we have.
You see, you are making it increasingly difficult for me, this side, looking at that side. So,
Right, Honorable Somi and then Honorable Hadebe.
I think in agreeing with your approach and what has been raised by honorable members here, I've been struggling getting into this report because ours is a matter of rights and sense, and they're not here. And if they are not here, you take, for example, a number of those deviations which we have seen previously, and the number is as well coupled with the actual expense on such. So the reduction of a number, for me, it's less relevant than the quantum of the actual expenditure on those. It might be that we are talking about a few million rands in an institution which is making use of hundreds of billions of rands. So a number for me talks nothing. So a detail would assist us in this situation. While I do appreciate that there's been reduction of what against what, and that is not necessarily here. So even if you allow that they must pull it back and so forth, then this becomes just a story, not the actual detail of what we really want to see anyways. I don't know how he can start to make us happy.
Okay. Can you just mind your mic there? Honorable Hadebe.
No, Chair, you see, the speaker is raising these issues as by the way. This thing has been happening. You reject the deviation, whoever comes in new, the same thing will happen via backdoor. Chair, there are process and procedure in place for you to deviate with the normal procurement processes. You cannot just send a deviation without getting approval somewhere. And if that thing has perpetually been happening, someone has not been doing his job. You are not getting that sense in the report whether or not we are nipping that in the bud. There are no milestone projections. You speak about SAP, which is does not have internal control. SAP is an IT system. It's not like growing a tree. And then it's going to take ages for it to grow. You are not telling us how long will it take for you to fix the SAP system. We are talking about an IT system. So we've been grappling, Chair, to understand. We'll end up asking lot of unnecessary questions because of the nature and the extent of the report. Hence, earlier on, my argument was that was it deliberate that we get the report last night? Because it's going to limit us in probing and focusing on critical questions. Now we're going to ask these non-starter issues of questions because the report does not give us details.
Okay, Honorable Van Meenen.
So do you understand when I said we are going to end up having stage 6 load shedding here as members because of the report?
Bamba. Right. Honorable Van Meenen.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think it needs to be noted that when we were actually at Megawatt Park, the issue of the expansions and the deviations was specifically addressed as being problematic. It isn't so much the quantum or the number, it's the control system around that. What is being done to ensure that when there is a variation, when there is a deviation, it in fact is properly assessed and is not just done for the sake of the fact that they haven't completed the work timeously or some other reason that really should not be allowed to process it. So it's about the control system ESCOM is introducing to actually deal with that contractual uncertainty. That's what we're really interested in.
Yeah, look, all right, Honorable Liz. I'm going to try and tie this down, and then we will...
Mr. Chairman, yeah, thank you. I don't have much to say. I just want to ask Sully, how long has he been doing this job, and what action has he taken to stop this this behavior? What exactly has he done to stop it?
Yeah. You see, colleagues, here's my difficulty. We seem to be having this discussion anew when we've had it. It's as if now We've never gone to ESCOM. We never met with the executives and the board. We never went to Medupi and Gusile. Siyaqala nje ukubonana today. No. Because this now starts walking, looking, speaking, and sounding like malicious compliance. No. Let's come. I do not think that you are assisting, you see. And the problem is that we're speaking in generic terms. And like they're saying, Babsoli, you know how we operate here. We speak to detail. If you went to your own records of the meeting we had, in your offices, nowhere else, in your own offices, your notes should tell you that these matters were raised. And why this becomes problematic, and colleagues, I'm sure you'll agree, if Bob Solis says people are bringing things on the side, the same thing, it means then your controls are weak completely. And weak, as far as I'm concerned, is an understatement. They're probably non-existent. Why would something try and come back again if it has already been dealt with? There's no systems. And I think it becomes that, what are you doing about it? Maybe let's speak to that, because obviously we've realized that because the issue of consequence management arises. If people continue doing the same thing wrong over and over again and they remain part and parcel of the establishment and nothing happens, then you are bound to have these kind of problems. Quite frankly, to say the least, this section here on deviations and expansions falls flat on its face in terms of convincing us that something has happened. No. See, as you can, I'm trying very hard to make sure we remain on focus and we need to rely. At some point, I'm just going to let my members just come at you. No, colleagues. We can't sit here and pretend as though we did not have this discussion. We can't. Right. I'm going to hand over to Babsoli and give him a second attempt at trying to speak to this. But what I'm saying is, CEO, I hope it's not the first time you are hearing that there are attempts at ESCOM to try and reintroduce things that had already been dealt with. Because if it is the first time, that's a concern. And if it's not, I'd be interested to know what action steps are being taken to make sure that those individuals are dealt with. Because obviously I would want to reintroduce something if I'm corrupt about it. If I want to chow the money, I'm going to be persistent in my efforts of chowing the money. So we would want an explanation either way. Right? Sonia, the last one, and then Babsoli will have a second attempt at this, and the CEO, I hope he has noted what we are saying.
Yeah. I think you are trying hard to ensure that we really continue with the, yeah. with the meeting. You are trying very hard. I'm saying so because there is a report that was adopted by Parliament, and that report was sent to ESCOM. And they are coming back now to indicate that since Parliament adopted that report, this is our response on the areas that are concerning to functionality, accountability, areas of management, areas of governance at ESCOM,
these are the things, steps that we're taking. The general nature of the report is not necessarily close to what Parliament has sent to ESCOM on these matters. As a matter of example, I think that's what the gentleman is referring to on the specific areas which are a bit hidden here, which begins to say, oh, well, it looks like now we are just chasing insignificant figures or stuff in as far as these infringements are concerned. If things which have been denied are still continuing coming in, it tells us that not only the systems, the individuals who are causal factors, they're still there.
Yeah.
You see, brewing issues, while you are chasing these others, you see that there's a somewhat a very active army which seeks to destabilize the ESCOM one way or the other. But they're not telling us. We sat with a pile of that report.
Yeah.
We sent that report back and we received this, which is hardly the slides which we received last night on those matters. So I seek to plead with the CEO. But I appreciate that you have made time to come and make some presentation to us here. But the detail is not sufficient. It's somewhat not there.
Colleagues, we sent 23 recommendations to ESCOM. 23. My mind tells me that if I was coming to do a report back on the report of Parliament, I would have said, right, 6.1 of the recommendations. It says contracts must be managed properly by suitably skilled and qualified people to ensure that expiring contracts are identified timely and the appointment of contractors is done through an open market process. That's recommendation 6.1. I would have tabulated 6.1 and the action step next to it. The issue we're speaking about here of expansions and deviations, 6.1.3 of the report reads, existing contracts which are due to expire must not be extended through variation orders without a proper due diligence being done, which due diligence reports must be kept on file for audit purposes. And we had said, because of a lack of a paper trail and record management, we qualified. I would have then said 6.1.3, the recommendation, and the action step. Mind you, school in SIG. And it's compounded, CEO, by the absence of the board. Because if I may ask, did the board have sight of this presentation that is presented here? You know, patience yam nam manje is on a diet. Right, Honorable Mente? The questions asked still remain and will be answered, but I think we're going to need to narrow this down to a process. And yeah, all right, Honourable Mente.
Chair, I see where you want to go. We are also very keen on getting to the bottom of this. We want to fix Medupi and Kusile. We want to get rid of IPPs. We don't want to see the employment of any human resource in ESCOM being laid off. However,
No, hold on.
As you have tabulated the recommendations on how they should have drafted the report, if we are going to go further, let me show you. I just want to illustrate to you how are we going to be hitting a solid wall. The following page is talking to governance and internal investigation. It doesn't tell us in the category of investigation who's being investigated for what. It doesn't tell us who's been taken to for criminal cases and is going to attend court for what and how much was wasted there. It gives us a figure, which is a summary of each category. The report here, the recommendation, is talking about vetting and people. It doesn't tell us who is still refusing to be vetted. It doesn't tell us who has been vetted so far. And in terms of recovery, it gives us a figure that Trillion, McKinsey, Impulse, and Deloitte paid the money. Against what? How much is outstanding? When are they paying it? So, the detail of this report is what is lacking. We are called Standing Committee on Public Accounts to deal with public funds, not to deal with a story. This is now a story. We ought to receive a detailed report on each and every recommendation. If you deal with people, that the consequences, who? Because you might find that in terms of these consequences, some of the people that are supposed to have been dealt with here or that have received suspensions or warnings are seated with us. And you find a person with a lesser charge has been dismissed from ESCOP. And those are the things that we need to guard against. The worst part of it, to have no detail on how much spent on these things. How much are we going to spend on Medupi? How much do we need to fix it? When is it going to be finished? Not to say, no, we're going to do maintenance on Medupi, we'll do maintenance on Kusile. Okay. For how long? For how much? How much must Parliament give you? And how much have you spent on what Parliament has given you?
All right. But colleagues, we're going to map out a way forward just now. Because what is called into question as to whether we continue or not. We'll make a determination on that just now. All right, Honorable Hadebe, and then the Honorable Botele. And then we'll come back to this call.
Thanks, Chair. I think I'm also in line with you in terms of whether or not should we continue. It does not appear, it doesn't appear to me as if the leadership of ESCOM and the board is taking us seriously. Does not appear like that, Chair. We are given a report that speaks about 18 months of load shedding. We're not even given at least detailed CEO of what is your current maintenance factor. We must assume we know in the past it was 80% availability, 10% maintenance, and 10% breakdown. You're just telling us 18 months. We don't know whether you are dealing with your critical component within that aspect. Now, we must probe all these questions for us to be able to inspire confidence out there within the country and the nation. We are faced with serious challenge of load shedding, and all we get is that 18 months. I'm tempted to say they need to go back and come back to us when they are serious about giving us facts and ensuring that they inspire confidence, not only to us as parliamentarians, but the nation out there who are faced with a serious economic challenge due to load shedding. We're pumping billions into Eskom. We don't even know how much is spent on maintenance. We're just told maintenance. The former CEO went on national television that when he was still in charge, he had established a well-equipped a team of engineers to deal with issues of maintenance. The issue that we are raising of skills, saying Eskom does not lack skills. Your average skills when it comes to engineers is 10 to 15 years. Now, for you to say you are lacking skill, it speaks contrary to your current availability in terms of staff complement. We're not getting those details here. So instead of us sitting here and getting more and more frustrated, I would propose that
Ibambe.
All right, colleagues, you're fine, and then we'll start to head over to Eskom.
Can I also bamba, Chair, for the moment?
Okay. Honorable Swart?
Chair, thank you. I think the importance of deviations, Mr. Sodi, you will know, having been at National Treasury, the key. And this is not something new. Scopely in the previous parliament, in this parliament, has been dealing with this issue. And we know it forms one of the hearts of the state capture inquiry as well, the whole issue of deviations. So, Chair, I fully support and understand the frustration of the members. But my question is, what type of detail was requested? And maybe one doesn't want to waste the time necessarily here, but I do appreciate that there's a lot of detail that is required. And maybe the way forward is not to waste this time, have a general discussion, and then ask for the specifics to be given within 7 days or whatever, so that we don't waste the time that we've got here. Because everyone is watching, everyone is concerned about this. We know my experience with the Eskom inquiry, the deviations was a key aspect in the last parliament. So I just want to focus on that. Thank you, Chair.
Eskom is aware that they are coming to speak to the report and the recommendations. They are very aware of that. It's just that, you see, it would be funny if I were to dictate to Eskom professionals, mind you, how to present their report. But like I'm saying, it's common cause. There's 23 recommendations. You report on each recommendation. If there's no comment, you indicate that on recommendation 9, at this point, no comment. Such as an update. So, Eskom is very aware of what is required. And we had a discussion with Eskom, and we emphasized the issue of details. So that this meeting is not in a vacuum. There's a very specific focus and context. We went to Medupi in Gusile. We met with the Eskom leadership and management. And I indicated to the leadership of Eskom when they were last year on the debt matter with municipalities that the report is done and they can must have sight of it. So in fact, that was a fourth layer to the conscientization of Eskom on this matter. All right? But we are going to continue. But you see, what we must not do is allow for a way out, an easy way out. They've flown all the way from Johannesburg. But we've got our reservations. I will explain them later. Right? So let me give you an opportunity again. And so I think now you are clear. We want details. So on any slide you go to, detail. We want to get a sense of whether there's movement or not. It's a pity, Nje, we had the technicality with the presentation. But nonetheless, we will engage it. All right. Over to Eskom. Babsol.
Chair, you're right. From Treasury, I know what you presented on deviation modification. However, we have the back line that contains, when we are saying 37 deviations, those lists we have. Unfortunately, when we were packaging, we were saying those are going to be back slides, where if you want us to make them available, we'll make them available. For everything that I'm talking, the number, we have those slides.
All right. We've got our committee assistant here. Make them available and copies will be made. So that's why I was saying, would Magukona pull it out? If OIR in Lelapo, we work in real time, live time. Yeah, so if the information is there, let's pull it out. But, let's pull it out. Meeting is in session of until 1. So, we are not leaving here until 1.
Correct.
But, so may I make this recommendation, CEO? Can we? No, I'm going to make it for him. Don't worry, I will speak on his behalf. In my other life, I'm a spokesperson, so I'll speak on his behalf. We will park the issue of the deviations and expansions, and CEO, I'll request that your team member responsible for the next section in the presentation takes us through whilst Soli sorts out and packages the information. Can I just make a housekeeping rule, not rule announcement? There was a delay with the arrival of water there, and tea and coffee, so if you would like, please can you quietly just go there one at a time for those that will require, so we don't disturb the meeting, right? Can you hold over to the next section, and Babsol will sort out his issues, and Lungisa will be on standby as and when those issues arrive, so that information can circulate, right? Let's come. So you just let us know to which part of the presentation we are going to. Dando, my schedule, thank you. Right.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Deputy Minister, and Honorable Members of the Committee. I will be taking you through pages 16 of the presentation, page 16.
All right. Internal investigation.
Which deals with governance and internal investigations.
All right.
I think as a parting shot, Honorable Chair, I need to mention for the benefit of the committee and honorable members that we have ongoing investigations by the various law enforcement agencies, the Special Investigating Unit by presidential proclamation is investigating maladministration at ESCOM. We also have the Directorate for Priority Crime Investigation, the HOCS, seized with various matters at ESCOM. We also have the State Capture Commission of Inquiry based at ESCOM since October 2018, over and above our own internal investigations through the Assurance and Forensics Department. The Assurance and Forensics Department is also assisted by a panel of forensic experts who are external service providers to ESCOM. Having said that, Chair, I've noted some of the questions that Honorable Member Mentor raised regarding this part of the presentation, and I commit to provide the necessary detail in due course. We have to date, Chairperson, since our last meeting with the committee at Megawatt Park. We are pleased to report that 40 employees have been referred to the DPCI and the Special Investigating Unit. These are employees in the new build space. These are employees that are in the procurement space at various power stations. So the detail that Mr. Chitangana will provide relating to who, what, when, how will also be reflected to say who are these 40 employees, where are they based, what action has since been taken internally by ESCOM before being referred to the SIU and also the HOPS. We are also pleased to report that two former ESCOM executives, as it is public knowledge, were arrested in December after a long and protracted investigation between the SIU and the DPCI. The matter is currently serving before the Specialized Commercial Crimes Court with a date of March as a return date for that matter, Chairperson. We also have 261 active cases. Now, with the establishment of a forensic panel, which was established in October last year, we are able to accelerate these 261 cases by appointing
Don't worry about them.
Oh, I should continue, Jeffers. Thank you. With the assistance of the external forensic panel, we'll be accelerating the 261 cases that had been referred. Now, these cases, Jefferson, are a function of whistleblower reports that get fed through an independently managed forensic hotline, which is not managed by ESCOM. There is a third party that manages that hotline for ESCOM, and those matters are then fed through to our assurance and forensics division to the extent that there is capacity in-house and there are no conflicts of interest. Those matters are then investigated by the ANF, Assurance and Forensics Division, and to the extent there are capacity constraints, those matters are then referred to our external forensic panel suppliers. The other issue, Chairperson, that is important for us is whilst we are investigating internally with the assistance of our forensic external suppliers, it is important all the time that we have this collaborative effort ongoing between ESCOM and the various law enforcement agencies that I mentioned when I started, so that when we deal with a civil part or a disciplinary part of the matter, the criminal part also is being investigated and receives the due attention. On that score, Chairperson, I would like to move on to the next part dealing with the lifestyle audit. When we last met with the committee at Megawatt Park, we indicated that lifestyle audits were still ongoing. We are pleased to report that to date, the F-band levels and E-band levels, which is the senior management and top management of ESCOM, they have all gone through lifestyle audits. This is about 370 people. Now, of the 370 persons, Chairperson, the high-risk reports, because once the lifestyle audit is conducted, then a report is generated for consideration by ESCOM senior management and the board. Those individuals that have been deemed to be high risk, those have been referred for further investigation by the SIU. The benefit there, Chairperson, is that the SIU, through its powers, is able to access bank statements of the various affected individuals and look at their historical acquisitions of movable and immovable assets and interests in the country and externally. So with our joint working with the SIU, on the 31st of March, the quarterly report that you indicated, we'll be able to build in further reports and the detail to say who are these individuals that have been referred to the SIU as high risk and what are the next steps. On this score, Chairperson, board and management have taken a decision as well to filter the lifestyle audits further down to all the levels of ESCOM. We are working with the DPE in this instance because the previous exercise proved to be a bit costly for ESCOM for these 370 individuals. Now, DPE has come up with an innovative solution which we are busy workshopping and will be able to report back to the committee on the 31st of March to say how far are we with that lifestyle audit insofar as the rest of the employees are concerned. We are also pleased to report, Chairperson, that 59 dismissals as a result of fraud and corruption were effected by end of December 2019. In the 31 March report, we'll provide the detail to say who are the people and what were the issues and in what areas were they involved. As of December 2019, there were additional 65 investigations that were concluded compared to the 289 in the period August 2019. So cumulatively in December, we had conducted 354 investigations, Chairperson. And as I stated in my opening statement, we work with all the law enforcement agencies, including the State Capture Commission. What we have there is a table, Chairperson, as of 31 December 2019. The left block deals with forensic investigations. The middle block deals with the disciplinary processes emanating from those forensic investigations. Then the right block deals with the matters that have been referred to the authorities, be it the DPCI, the SIU, etc., etc., Chairperson. With your leave, Chairperson, I don't know if you wish me to deal with the figures.
I suppose we can read them into the record. Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. The cumulative figure for forensic investigations as of 31 December 2019, Chairperson and honorable members, for fraud and corruption is 608. And of the 608, 254 are in progress, and 354 have been completed. Now, insofar as disciplinary processes are concerned, we received about 107 cases, 16 of which are still in progress, 91 have been closed, and 59 the affected employee has either resigned or have been dismissed as a consequence of the disciplinary hearing process. The matters that have been referred to law enforcement agencies outside ESCOM are 40. Of the 40, as of 31 December 2019, 37 remain in progress and 3 have been closed. We will provide the names and the further detail that the committee seeks as articulated, Chairperson. Having said that, Chairperson, there is a need to strengthen the internal audit function at ESCOM. As of 13 December 2019, the then Chief Audit Executive and Head of Assurance and Forensics at ESCOM was dismissed as a consequence of any investigation that was conducted, a disciplinary process that was undertaken, and then the chairperson found the then chief audit executive guilty, and he was relieved of his duties on the 13th of December last year. So other than that, other senior member, head of forensics, also resigned during the course of October as a consequence of an investigation as well, Chairperson. That's the detail that we will also provide in our quarterly report. And we also need to beef up on our proactive reviews and the probities for not only board members, but also for employees and management that preside in these committees that are involved in the procurement space, Chairperson. The Assurance and Forensics Division currently has got 102 full-time employees, Chairperson, and they are stretched, and we need those resources. We've discussed with the GCE the need to embolden and strengthen that function, Chairperson. Moving on, Chairperson, to page 18 of the slides, to deal with some of the topical matters in terms of recoveries, which are financial recoveries as a result of fraud and corruption against suppliers, Eroscom. In his report, Mr. Chitangano mentioned that we have a supplier review committee that has recently been established. What we realized, Chairperson, that historically, forensic reports had the propensity of focusing on the employee rather than the relationship between the employee and the supplier, such that when you receive the forensic report, it does not talk to the supplier. It only deals with the employee. The employee is dealt with, but nothing gets done with the supplier. So that's an issue that we've also canvassed with the external forensic suppliers to ESCOM to say, look at this picture holistically, and you want a holistic report such that the supplier review committee becomes just that from that report. If the report says discipline the employee, that process must be undertaken. To the extent that the report says action ought to be taken against the supplier, the supplier review committee would do exactly that, Chairperson. Dealing with Trillion, Chairperson, on the 18th of June last year, ESCOM received a favorable judgment against Trillion at the High Court in Pretoria, where the High Court ordered Trillion to pay back 595 million rand, including interest and costs, to ESCOM. To date, that has not occurred, Chairperson, because Trillion has since appealed to the Supreme Court of Appeal. This is in July 2019, post the judgment. Then ESCOM took measures to recover, Chairperson, by going to court and applying for an interim enforcement order, which was then granted on the 2nd of October, and Trillion was ordered to pay ESCOM within 5 days, with effect from the 2nd of October 2019. Trillion has failed, Chairperson. What we have since done, we collaborated with the head of investigations in the office of the National Director of Public Prosecutions, Advocate Hermione Cronier, in assisting us because they had had a preservation order against regiments and some Trillion assets, including Mr. Eric Wood. We have now brought a liquidation proceedings against Trillion. We have also brought contempt of court proceedings against Mr. Eric Wood. That matter is still before court, pending, Chairperson. The McKinsey matter, we recouped, Chairperson, the 1.1 billion rand, which was the capital that was paid to McKinsey. We've also since received 99 million rand, which was interest that would have accrued to the 1.1 billion rand. In December last year, Chairperson, we were served with summons by Impulse International. Impulse International had cause to do business with an ESCOM subsidiary, ESCOM Rotech Industries. And this is where a former executive's daughter was a partner, a shareholder, and that executive had not disclosed to ESCOM. And he was subjected to a disciplinary process. He resigned prior to the disciplinary process resuming. We are in court and we are defending the matter. Our position, Chairperson, relating to this matter, we've had a stakeholder meeting with the SIU, with the Hawks, with the State Capture Commission of Inquiry. The position is we are going to approach court, and our relief is to have all task orders and contracts that had been issued to Impulse International set aside. So we are not only defending this 81 million rand, it's including all the task orders and funds that had been paid by ESCOM to Impulse International. On the matter of Dongfeng, Chairperson,
during the course of April last year, the BBBE Commission issued a report. And in the report, the BBBE Commission made a finding to the effect that Eskom had breached the provisions of the BBBE Act by having awarded the contract in relation to the Duva unit to Dongfeng because it didn't have suitable BE credentials. Where we are at right now, Chairperson, is in light of the findings of the BBBE Commission, because the parties, Marianne Roberts and GE, have taken Eskom to court, the parties are in discussions, as we speak, Chairperson, to have a settlement of the matter because the BBBE Commission has set this contract aside. So in order for Eskom to honor the findings of the BBBE Commission, it is wise to have the other parties around the table, find each other, and limit the exposure as so far as costs are concerned, Chairperson. The last matter, Chairperson, is Deloitte Consulting. Eskom is recouping 207 million rand against Deloitte Consulting, Pty Ltd. This relates to task orders that were issued and awarded to Deloitte Consulting irregularly without an open tender process, Chairperson. We go at length in our court papers as to what happened. There were coffees had, there were overseas trips had, there were unsolicited proposals which find themselves in the Eskom space. What is key here, Chairperson, to note is that Eskom never conducted its own needs analysis. The needs analysis were done outside by the same contractor that was issued and awarded the task orders to. The other issue for the committee and members to note are breaches of the triple PFA, where prices, effect, and evaluation component was disregarded to benefit the supplier against whom Eskom is recovering, Chairperson. In our next report, Chairperson, we will provide the detail, attach the court papers if that would be not too cumbersome for the members, and also indicate what other matters are in the pipeline for recovery. Thank you, Chairperson.
Right. Colleagues, that was in response to item 6.8 of the recommendations in our report. You will note questions to it. We'll continue with the presentation. We'll take questions at the end. Yeah, we will note them. Also noting that, of course, our deadline is the 31st of March for all investigations. So this is just an update on progress. So Eskom still has another 6 weeks in terms of our report on this particular matter, but they will provide the necessary details and annexures to these matters. Right, let's proceed then. CEO, your next batsman.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. I hope we can avoid the bouncers. If I can ask Mr. Nkumalo to deal with the new build at Medupi and Kusile.
All right, Zwida, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Deputy Minister, and all the members. In terms of the recommendations, I will be dealing with the issue first, 6.23, that deals with the cost to completion of Medupi. Since the members visited us last year, Honorable Chair, I'm pleased to announce that Medupi, currently all units have went into synchronized into the grid, the last unit being Unit 1, that is currently also all six units at Medupi now have been synchronized into the national grid, Honorable Chairperson. And also, Honorable Chairperson, in terms of the, out of the six units, five of them have been now handed over from the project team, which was constructing the Medupi projects, to the generation side as well, which we are now responsible for those units from the generation side, save for the last unit, which is Unit 1, which is currently still now undergoing the last phases of commissioning. The plan is to have that unit also transferred from the project team to us in generation during the phase of the next quarter of the second quarter of this year, Chair. So, meaning that all the operating unit at Medupi will then now fall squarely under the generation, and they will all be generating. Suffice to say, Chair, on Unit 1, I will deal with it as well at Medupi, that we had one of our contractors during this phase, which is a company called CPZ, declaring hardship on both stations, Medupi and Gusile. This contractor is responsible for the removal of the ash on the plant. So for that, then we're just dealing with that portion, Chair. But for Medupi, we still committed that it will finalize within this second quarter of this year, Honourable Chair. And then also in terms of the cost, which the committee also have commented on, that the Medupi cost of 145 billion, we still committing that these projects will then be completed within that cost, as we shared with the committee when the committee last visited Medupi. Moving on to Gusile project, Honorable Chair, as part of that new build, Unit 2 and 3, they are 1, 2, 3 at Gusile. They have all now been synchronized into the national grid. They are currently producing. With Unit 3 and 2, plan to be handed over to go to commercial operations, which means then they get moved away from the project team to us in generation, so that it becomes part of this national grid. So Unit 3 is on the second quarter of this year, and then Unit 2 will be on the fourth quarter of this year to be handed over from the project to generation. So there is some projects, Honorable Chair, on both of those units. We're currently busy with the last test in terms of compliance with the National Grid Code. That's what we are busy with, and then we will be handing those units over. You will notice, Chair, on Gusile 4, 5, and 6, the contract that I've referred to, that it has declared hardship, which is that Clyde Beckerman, South Africa. It's impacting those that ash removal processes. So we had then to go on an open inquiry, which is closing now on the 24th of this month, to get the supplier that will assist to deal with that that project. So we were also trying to accelerate, also in line with what Soli was preventing in terms of avoiding deviations. But yeah, that's the company that has declared hardship. So then we needed to, for us to fast track, to go out on inquiry to get suppliers that will assist us to complete this portion, especially on the ash removal portion of the project, Honorable Chair. And then also at Gusile, Chair, in terms of the cost to completions, we have not projected any changes to what we have shared with the committee when the committee last visited us as well, that 161 billion. So that is still the cost for Gusile as well. Honorable Chair, if I move on to the next slide, Honorable Chair, which addresses the recommendations for 6.2 and 6.18, that was dealing with the resources for this build program. We have managed, Honorable Chair, now to appoint the project director for Gusile in January this year, on the 23rd, it started. And then also the issue of the skills shortages that was shared with the committee, which resulted into this recommendation. Honorable Chair, we've now advanced with the appointment of all those skills. As you can see on the table, the details of each of the category of the skills that we have to appoint to make sure that the project does not slip. We meet the timelines as well as we have communicated, Chair. The only thing, like I said, was that company that has declared hardship. That is the only thing that has impacted us somehow, but we are trying to claw back as well on that, Honourable Chair. Continuing, Chair, with recommendation 6.14 up to 6.22. On the next slide, Chair. Chair, since the committee visited us, I'm quite pleased as well from the generation side that we did report to the, as part of the defects at Ingula in particular, that those units couldn't reach the maximum capacity that we that are rated for. So it's pleasing, Honourable Chair, to report to the committee that working with the contractor, we have now managed to resolve that defect at Ingula, that each unit now we have managed to free that those megawatts that we couldn't get. Now two units at one penstock, which means that they can produce the rated megawatt of 333, Chair. So it means then out of the four units, all of them now, they can do that maximum rating. So that is a major achievement, Honourable Chair and the members, since the committee visited us at Ingula. Also part of what we have reported to the committee, Honourable Chair, was the issue on the defects, mainly on the boiler side with MHPSA. So we have now managed to reach an agreement with them in terms of dealing with those defects, while we are also dealing with the issues of contractual as well, to say we have agreed to see, while this issue, there is some disagreement, but let's continue to fix the defect so that it doesn't continue to affect the company and the country as well, Honourable Chair. So those defects, we have started now with the first unit at Medupi Unit 3. It's currently under that defects correction period for 75 days. So it should be returning, Honourable Chair, by April. So the details of the defect, Chair, they are categorized in terms of the short terms, the milling plant that we are dealing with, the boiler itself, and all those issues that we have been experiencing the difficulties, Chair. So that's what we are currently busy with. The first unit is down. I will go through the rest of the units, because now we have also put them as part of our maintenance capacity as well, to see, because of these units of their size, they are too big, we need to deal with them as quickly as possible this year so that we recover the full 800 megawatts on each of them, Honourable Chair. That's a priority for this year. Like I said, that Medupi 3 is currently down. That's the first unit that we are dealing with. Obviously, also, we have formulated now the technical governance from our teams and also from the contractors, that there is clear oversight as we are executing this thing so that it doesn't cause the delay as well, so that when things are happening, if there is some snake that gets picked off, it gets addressed there and there. So there's a team from my team, Team Generation Engineering, that is also working with the contractor to make sure that the defects are also executed as soon as possible. And then we've also agreed on the bonds as well, so that if things are still not working, we not get ESCOM should not be worse off from where we are as well, Chair. So the details, Chair, appear on that same slide at the bottom in terms of what we are doing. And we have also now, as part of while we are waiting for that program, because we know now the defects, what's happening, we also on the short term revise the maintenance approach to see, instead of waiting for 24 months, we have interventions at 12 months, so that while we're waiting for the rest of the unit, so we don't just sit back and allow situation to deteriorate. So that's what we are doing as well, Chair, so that we minimize the impact, Chair. Currently, if I can also report that five of the six units at Medupi are currently running and producing, except for Unit 3 that is currently on the outage to as part of this defects correction. Honorable Chair, if I move on to the next slide, it shows the time frames in terms of when this negotiation started, but since the committee visited us, I've also talked about what we have achieved now in terms of the agreement, and then also agree which unit are we starting with, which is Medupi 3. So, and it's also showing the details there, Honorable Chair, in terms of the milling plant. The milling plant is the area where we grind the coal. So we have serious deficiencies there as well. So that part of that, we are addressing that issues, and also on the backs, at the backs of the station chair, and all of those defects there. So we're hoping that this unit, when it returns in April, it should then give us it should go to maximum rated energy that it should be producing, chair. And then we will also give it some time to evaluate together with the contractor. If there's still some of the things that we are not comfortable with, we'll still deal with it as well as such, Chairperson. Honorable Chair, if I move on to the next recommendations as part of the defects at Medupi and Busile, which is 3.3, 6.14, 6.15, recommendation 6.18. It just shows now, Honorable Chair, the plans that we have factored in the capacity plan to say on this date we will be dealing with this unit. You see that the dates of unit 3 that I've shown, that from 25 to the 9th of April. So that is the first unit, and then the second unit will be unit 6. And then it goes through all the units, Honorable Chair. And then unit 6 part of the modification has been done. That's why you'll see the dates are a bit lesser now, because there's some things that the contractor does need to correct. But then the rest of the units, as they appear there, unit 1, because it's still also not commercial as yet, so we are able to deal with some of the defects now as well as part of this prior to the commercial operations as well of that. So we've got those dates now that we have agreed with the contractor for both units at Medupi and also at Busile on that slide 34, Honorable Chair, and that's been factored now in terms of the capacity plan that the CE referred to earlier on. So with those dates as well and the reduction for each of the units in terms of what we are doing, so there is a high commitment to deal with this issue as speedily as possible as well too, because these are the big units that are also sitting on the coal fields, and we've got huge reserves there. That's why we need to see these units running. So in terms of the defects and the issues that the new build, that is the status for both Ingula and Medupi and Busile, Chairperson. We will continue also to provide an update as well when we come back in terms of how is the unit performing after each of these interventions as requested, Honorable Chair.
All right. Colleagues, let's get the next batsman so that we tie down on the report. Absolutely, I hope you are winning with the information that you require. Sorted. Okay, perfect. All right. Let's get the next section.
Honorable Chair, thank you very much. Dan Mashego is in charge of primary energy.
Okay.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Members.
Bob, Dan, please bring the mic close and then use your rally voice into the mic.
I'll try again. Thanks, Chair. I can tell now it's on. Good morning once again, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Honorable Deputy Minister, and everybody in the room. I'm going to start with Busile in sequence as per the report that we've received. Maybe just to give a highlight, I may be repeating, some of the things that Chair, the committee, went through. Busile is common knowledge, it was identified where it's built, to be supplied by New Lago, a colliery. Unfortunately, when the negotiations, could not, be concluded, we ended up having to make a plan, and the board supported that we went on open inquiry for the life of, to source coal for the life of the power station, and board supported that for the first 10 years, we conclude contract while, New Lago, issues are resolved and construction of the mine is happening. So we're doing it, Chair, in parallel. As we are speaking, every single ton of coal going to Kusile, as the members have witnessed, is coming by truck because we don't have, you know, like a rail infrastructure, and the mine is not constructed. From a quality control perspective, every single ton of coal that comes to Kusile gets pre-certified, you know, like at source. The reason why we're doing pre-certification at source is because the infrastructure at the power station doesn't allow for segregation of supply as the trucks come randomly, and it's also to avoid, you know, transporting coal that is, you know, like an outside specification. So what happens at the mining operations, Chair, is that we have our own appointed monitors who monitor the process of the coal stockpiles as they get created before they are loaded, the sampling process, and the quality analysis of the coal. And it gets, you know, like a flag when coal is still under construction or the stockpile is being, you know, like a sample. It gets flagged yellow. Should the stockpile pass, it gets green. Then it's ready to be loaded, and the people, you know, like witness that. So the analysis, when it gets done at the laboratory, the result immediately gets sent to the supplier and to ESCOM. The contractual obligation is on the supplier, but we also have control. So we know each and every single ton of stockpile that gets dispatched, you know, like from those mines, that it is within the contractual specification. Chair, what we've experienced, and it's not only in the coal space, it's most of the commodities that run on truck, is that they tend to be, you know, like a malfeasance and malicious characters where cargoes get tampered with. So we have seen then put in other measures like tracking every single truck, you know, like that goes to, you know, like a ESCOM stations. We also, you know, like instituted a process of getting what we call tamper-proof seals. Like most commodities, you can see whether, you know, like the cargo has been tampered with. When the truck arrives at the station, and this is mainly on the truck, the other modes of delivery, Chair, we fairly are okay from a quality control perspective. I'm talking conveyor and rail. So when the truck arrives at the power station and the cargo tamper-proof seal is not in place or there is something wrong, we send the truck back and we suspend, you know, like a supply. Even if it's one truck, you know, we suspend the supply, and the supplier with their contractor have to come, you know, like to ESCOM, explain what has happened, give us assurance, you know, like how they're going to fix the problem and so on. So it's created a lot of, you know, like a uneasiness, but we are quite comfortable that what we are doing is basically for the right thing. And as we are changing the contracts to include those particular improvements. So what we do, Chair, is that we identify improvements, we start with them, and then we'll piggyback the contracts, you know, later on. We don't wait for the contractual obligations, you know, like to be done. So this process, Chair, we call it a pre-certification process. It's part of the coal quality management procedure. As I mentioned, it's every day, 24/7 around the clock. Every single ton of coal gets screened through that particular, you know, like a process. And some of the things I mentioned do not only cover Kusile, Chair. They will cover the entire, you know, like a portfolio where we are delivering coal via, you know, like those particular means. We've even gone a step further, Chair, to have monitors even at the power station. So every single truck that gets offloaded, there are people that are witnessing and checking, you know, like whether what we're getting as a cargo correlates to our monitors that are in mine in terms of what has been dispatched. It is still labor intensive because we've got, and when I get to other long-term solutions, I will talk about that. Say, you know, while we're improving, we do some rudimentary solution and then we'll piggyback with technology, you know, like moving forward and so on. The sample taking at the mines, it's not done by a human. It's an auto-mechanical, you know, like a sampler, which makes sure that, you know, within the ISO standards, which we are prescribing in our contracts, you know, like the sample is representative of the particular, you know, like a coal stockpile that is created. The labs which analyze this coal are ESCOM-controlled labs, so it's third-party labs which we have oversight. So it is on ESCOM side that control happens. It doesn't sit, you know, like with the miner. Although the sample gets split, you know, between a contractual sample, we keep a reference sample in case there becomes dispute later on, which, you know, we can nominate any other lab to basically solve the dispute. Then we take another sample to the mine and ESCOM. So there's always a comparison within, you know, acceptable statistical limit to say this sample is indeed representative even when it's analyzed at various labs and so on. And I've already touched on how we communicate the result, that it's real-time and it's 24/7, you know, like around the clock. The we also went, I think, beyond the time that you the portfolio committee visited. We made a conscious decision, you know, like to go back to our existing contract for Kusile, to go and renegotiate, you know, like a better quality, you know, to ensure that, you know, Kusile mills can last. So the contracts we have are within, you know, like the design parameters. So we just push the envelope on the better side and so on. So every single ton of coal that will be going to Kusile, our envisaged outcome is that, you know, like we move the spec much higher than what they basically require us and so on. That's part of the quality improvement that we want to do for Kusile. Chair, there are controls and audits that happen throughout, you know, like the process, which have to ensure the integrity of quality supply. So every single laboratory that is utilized to analyze the coal has to be ISO certified. So it's part of accreditation in terms of our procurement process, but the accreditation gets done through the SANAS process, you know, where we check. And
okay, just remind us, what slide are you on?
Oh, my sincere apology, I'm still on the first slide. That is the first slide of the Kusile.
Can you try to manage time?
Yes, sir.
And move.
No, it's not number two. Yeah, but it's a first slide on the coal quality. I'm on, oh, sorry, slide 26, my sincere apology, sir. But I'm on the, there's two, you know, like columns. I'm on the column on the right-hand side. I've dealt with issues on the left-hand side. So I haven't changed slides, Chair. My sincere apology for not marking which slides I'm on. Yeah. So as part of, you know, local controls, we audit the process and we audit, you know, like the parties which are responsible for the entire coal quality, you know, value chain. So we've got trained scientists who understand the ISO standards and who also understand the accreditation process that is at the lab. So it's a proactive, although we are not an accreditation, you know, like an institution, but we audit the labs on a very frequent basis to check whether they are compliant, you know, like to the requirements. We've even gone to a part where we've asked our own internal audit and assurance to go and stress test the process that we have. They identified as part of continuous improvement certain gaps, and I'm glad to say all the gaps that were identified, Chair, have been closed, so we don't have any outstanding issues. And that's part of process of saying, although we are having internal audits, get somebody else to audit the auditor, that's no police, the policeman, to make sure that everything is okay. We also have on a monthly basis, you know, like a what we call technical liaison meetings, which are contractual meetings where every aspect of the contract, including quality control, is discussed, you know, like with the suppliers. So, Chair, those are the things that are in place to ensure that quality is being focused on. But we're not stopping here, Chair. I think when I carry on further is that there are other things that we're looking at, you know, like to get further improvements and so on. And that is the next slide, which is slide number 27. We've divided them into short-term and long-term, you know, like initiatives.
You can go to the long-term, but that's why I was asking. You've covered the short-term piece.
Yes, yeah.
Things.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. On the long term, Chair, I'm glad to say we have, you know, like a business case that was approved from an investment perspective to automate the entire process value chain that is now from pit or from the mine until the coal enters the boiler, to lessen the, you know, the human interface, that everything. So when you move coal, you know exactly from which mine it's moving from. It gets automatically recorded. When the coal is in transit, you know where the truck is when it goes to the weighbridge. The correlation of quantities and qualities happens, you know, like automatically. That's basically what we're trying to implement, whether the coal is delivered by truck, delivered by rail, or delivered by conveyor. At this point in time, we have standalone, you know, like a system which do not integrate quality, contract management, and so on. We are in the procurement phase. Chair, I haven't provided the details, you know, but I think we've got a project plan which I can supplement the pack to say when do we expect to complete, you know, like the project, and we can say this is the go-live, you know, like a situation. And all this is done, Chair, because of, you know, malfeasance and, you know, things that we've seen happening, you know, like in the industry. We also have another project where we want to move for the road and rail delivered coal. As I mentioned, the coal gets pre-certified at source, which is at the mine. We want to move the payment point to have, you know, like the quality determination done at the power station. There is no off-the-shelf item. But we have, through our research, you know, like a facility and some of the scoping we've done, like in China, where they do have some element of coal movement on trucks, identified a solution, which also, you know, from an investment, we are going the pilot route. We should, by the end of December, have the pilot running at one of our stations, Tutuka, where we will test when a coal truck comes, a sample gets taken, you know, through an auger that digs through the coal. There is an auto analyzer that will tell you what the quality is. If the quality doesn't make the required contract spec, it doesn't even go through a weigh bridge. It gets turned immediately, and the risk is with the supplier. You know, like we as Eskom basically only will process coal that meets the requirement, and there's still a sample that gets taken for a desktop, lab benchtop, you know, like analysis.
Okay.
We also looking at no longer using third-party laboratories because we've identified exposure and risks. So we basically want to establish, you know, like a similar lab as you find at Richards Bay Terminal, where every single ton of coal that goes through that particular terminal gets analyzed at the lab. We've looked at their capability. They process about 76 million tons. We have about 50 million tons of coal that are, you know, that is transported on road and rail. So we are looking at a project to build an ESCOM, you know, like a own lab control to avoid the exposure. We are still in the ideation, you know, like a phase, doing concept studies, and we do have a project plan how we're going to, you know, like roll it out. The last one, Chair, is what the ESCOM CE has referred to, where we are looking at moving more coal on road, but also creating what we call an inland, you know, like a coal terminal. Well, you can have a control, centralization of dispatch, or it can be a number of them. And we are working with Transnet, because we've made a decision in ESCOM that rail and logistics is not our core business, and Transnet as a state-owned company which is responsible for rail has been identified in our long-term strategy to be the operator on a build, own, operate and maintain to provide rail services, you know, like to ESCOM, and we feel the inlet coal terminal falls within that particular, you know, like a space chair. So those are some of the, you know, items to look at improvement and making sure, you know, we close the gap from a control perspective. Chair, if you allow me to go to slide 26, but before I go off there, is that although this was triggered by what you've seen at Kusile, it doesn't only cover, you know, Kusile, it covers any other station whereby coal is transported using the same, you know, mechanisms. Midupi, Chair, similar principles as, you know, like a ISO, the difference is that all the coal going to Midupi is received via conveyor from the Tide Colliery Grootegeluk owned by Exxaro. And there is auto-mechanical, you know, like samplers. There are also control, you know, like online analyzers to look at things like moisture and ash, which are for process control. Samples are taken 24/7 in tranches of 3 hours. There is no, you know, like tampering in terms of, you know, like the sample taking is quite close. The sample, when it's taken, you know, like it gets segregated between the two companies, and the analysis gets done. And within a very tight margin of deviation, you know, the results are compared, and that becomes, you know, like a quality determination. So it's quite a straightforward established process where we've got coal running on conveyor, which is what we say is more comfortable. The difference is, you know, like the road. So the contract does provide, you know, like for some levers because you, unlike the pre-certification process where if coal doesn't meet the requirement, you don't transport it, you don't have to deal with it, you know, like at the power station. But where coal gets transported by conveyor, where the results are latent, there are contractual, you know, like remedies. If the coal, you know, like it's within the expected quality range, you know, the supplier gets full payment. If it's within rejection rate, that particular consignment on that particular day, you know, like will not be paid. And there's also a distress point where there is a price reduction. So these are controls that, you know, we put in the contract to hedge ourselves, to ensure that the supplier, you know, does not only look at volume, but they look at volume and quality chain. And similar to the other processes, we have got the same controls in terms of the audit process and the people that go and check, you know, like the labs at the two, you know, like mines. So this, I'm sorry, at the mine and ESCOM power station. Chair, if you allow me to move on to slide number 29 or page 29, which deals with the new LAGO recommendation, where the committee has recommended that we accelerate the negotiations. Just to give some brief background, the new LAGO coal company bought the resource, you know, from Anglo, and it's got a shareholding, you know, like whereby the major shareholder is Riti, which is one of our suppliers. So they are basically the lead negotiators, you know, like on this particular transaction. So post our board mandate to negotiate a long-term contract for this mine to be an anchor, you know, supply to Kusile on conveyor, and also to handle other third-party coal by conveyor to basically take away trucks coming into the power station. So we, Nyulago, what's happening currently, Chair, is that they are reviewing the business case and the life of mine plans that were, you know, like prepared by the previous owner with the intention to reduce the capital footprint, to improve on some of the construction efficiencies and so on. They are currently not ready to engage in detailed negotiations until they complete the business case, which they've given us the date of March 2020, that they would have completed the review of the life of mine plan and the business case, which includes the construction of the mine and the ramp up, you know, up until they get to a steady state point. So the mine will only supply at steady state 12 million tons versus what Kusile requires, which is 16 million tons of coal. So the shortfall for this coal is covered through the other contract that I've mentioned when we went out on open inquiry. We basically have negotiated some acceleration, you know, like processes while the company is reviewing the overall mine execution plan. They've identified opportunities to start mining what we call mini pits. So you basically break your mine into smaller operations so they can start accelerating, you know, like a supply, so we can get supply from it close to a colliery, which also will help us in terms of cost reduction because you are offsetting, you know, like the cost of transportation. So these pits that have been identified, codenamed H and D, will provide about 3.5, you know, like a million tons of coal starting from the current, you know, like a financial year. And as you've seen, the ramp up of Medupi, this becomes now a major, you know, like a supply, sorry, Kusile, while the units are being ramped up, you know, like as per the schedule shared by Peggy earlier on. And Chair, this is basically also in response to, you know, like the request from the committee that we must accelerate. So we looked at other innovative ways, you know, like with the miner that don't look at this thing from a, you know, big bang approach. You can do it, you know, like a piecemeal and also, you know, like be effective in that. Yeah. As I mentioned, the first code is expected, you know, like this year, once we can sort out the contractual requirement. So I think I've already touched on, you know, like the business case, you know, like and also, you know, like that it's in phases. Once we conclude with them from March, they're talking about 18 months before you can start getting the first code from the major, you know, like colliery.
I'm going to ask you to move with some speed.
Okay. I think I'm probably on the last bit, which is now the way bridge, you know, like a construction for Kusile. The four additional way bridge chair will be installed, which will be able to handle plus minus 80, you know, like trucks per hour, which will be sufficient to meet, you know, like the bend rate at Kusile. The scope has been completed, and we're expecting that the completion, you know, like of the scope will be by the end of April 2020. Obviously, any efforts to try and accelerate that, Chair, we will do that, yeah. And Chair, the rest of the coal offloading facility, Chair, construction started about 5 years ago, and it's still in progress. We're expecting that construction will be completed in 2020. It's a major civil, you know, like operation. But with everything that has been that is on the plan, Chair, I think by April 2020, we should have the old coal inloading facility at Kusile basically done. So that deals with Kusile, Chair. Most of all, I have the take or pay. I'm moving on to slide number 31, Chair, which is the update on the take or pay, you know, like a contracting clause, which is not unique, Chair, to Medupi. Chair, take or pay as a principle, you know, like is used widely. We use it as well, you know, like in all our contracts. It is a guaranteeing, performance guaranteeing, you know, like a clause which goes both ways, Chair, for both the supplier, you know, like and the off-taker, which is Eskom. I think in the case of Medupi, we went through about 9 contract addendums when the delays were happening to basically try and avoid, you know, like the take-or-pay, which I think we were successful up to a point when the last addendum, you know, like was concluded, which is addendum 9, ESCOM was confident that everything will then proceed, Chair, and that became the contract that we signed. Unfortunately, you know, as we all know, the schedule even then, you know, like did not run as supposed to, which is why from a risk mitigation, we did engage with Exxaro, and unfortunately we could not negotiate ourselves out of, you know, like the take or pay. As a mitigation, we then constructed an, what we call an excess coal stockpile, where we basically, coal that we cannot burn at Medupi, we stockpile. I mean, it's an 18 million tons stockpile, and we still have capacity, I think, for about 2 million tons, and there are three additional cells that are still to be built. So with that mitigation, Chair, I think we have, by and large, you know, post the other historical, you know, like a take-or-pay penalties that we have paid, you know, like a hedged ourselves. We are actually in the process with Transnet starting to move the coal, you know, like a, I think we'll start in probably the second quarter of the next financial year to move that coal off to Mpumalanga. It can only go to Kendal and Kusile from the match perspective. And I think most of the infrastructural issues are sorted out with the supplier, Transnet. We just have to sort out the commercial process which Transnet has undertaken for the offloading of coal in Mpumalanga, then we can start. That also gives us a lever that every single ton of coal that we need to offtake, Chair, will be able to offtake, Chair. Chair, as per your request, I would probably maybe on coal, you know, like I would stop there. And, you know, like as I mentioned, you know, like the other issues are basically, you know, like covered in here, although I summarized here. Page 32, okay, if I, then we step off coal and I come to gypsum. I think at steady state, when all six units are running, you know, from the flue gas desulfurization plant, there is an estimation that 900, you know, like 1,000 tons of gypsum will be, you know, like produced, and this is synthetic gypsum. We've done tests, Chair, you know, like for suitability of gypsum application in the construction industry to build rhino boards and products like that, ceilings and so on. And it looks, you know, like a very, you know, like a promising, you know, like a, I think the quality of coal also determines what type of product, you know, like that you are getting. So, Chair, the market is there. There is quite a lot of interest. We are in the process to get an approval of the commercial strategy to, you know, like send an expression of interest to the market for people who would like to offtake, you know, like a gypsum. And we looking at, you know, like a, I think in the first quarter of the next financial year, to have completed the strategy to go to the open market. So there is pre-work that is being done, you know, like from the strategic perspective. There has also been engagement with other departments, water and sanitation, environmental affairs, and so on, to look at the application, you know, like of gypsum. So there's quite a lot of work, you know, like happening, including, you know, like with our own shareholder ministry, looking at other opportunities, you know, like instead of now disposing and pay disposal, you know, like a fees, you are using it and you're deriving, you know, like a revenue, and it reduces your basically environmental abatement footprint. Yeah. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much. Colleagues, you would have received the schedule of the issues of deviations and expansions. I'm advised that it is quite a bundle of work. Somebody has had the opportunity to go through it whilst you are receiving the presentation. I would like to recommend colleagues that we suspend dealing with that, focus on the other issues, and we'll set another time to deal with the expansions and deviations of ESCOM, having looked at what we have received. So, see if there's any rounding comment on your side on the presentation, and then members will give questions, we'll do that.
Honourable Chair, thank you very much, and thanks for the attention of the members in listening to the ESCOM presentation. We really appreciate that. We have still a long way to go to fix ESCOM. As you will have heard, there are many issues that require addressing. our existing power stations, the new builds, our internal governance, a culture of adherence to good commercial practice. All of these issues need to be addressed, and it will require the support and, dare I say, vigilance of this committee as well to ensure that that happens. We are committed to meeting our obligations to South Africa to become again a reliable supplier of sustainable electricity to the country, and we take this obligation very seriously, but it will require time, and for that time we request not only the committee's indulgence but also the patience of the nation while we bring about the turnaround. We have focused today, Honourable Chair, on generation, but may I also point out that there is significant work to be done on the transmission and distribution part of the business, and at the appropriate time we will, obviously at your request, we will be in a position to inform you of interventions that are required there. Honourable Chair, just in closing, if there is appetite from the committee, and I've heard some of the members expressing that, to hear more about the generation turnaround plan, we would very much welcome the opportunity to come back and elaborate on that. Unfortunately, we were under the impression that it was outside of the scope of today's meeting, but we will definitely come back, and Mr. Nkumalo is engaged on a daily basis in developing that plan, so we are very welcome to share this with you.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, colleagues, we have got 55 minutes, so I'll ask us to be brief, succinct, and to the point, and then so what we'll do, we will start in the front and come to the back. I will request that ESCOM take note of questions, and then you will field them at the end. So, right, Honourable Van Minden, you are first. You are first person on this side. Right, over to you.
Right, thank you very much. I really did want to focus on the expansions and variations, as well as the misappropriation of funds and the investigation. But I understand that that report will largely only be brought to us at the end of March, and also we got this report late for various reasons. I do want to point out that it is very glib, there's very little detail, but I think we're probably going to be addressing that. So I'm not going to go into that, but what I really do want to look at, Mr. Mashekho, the issue of the New Largo coal field. I mean, we know Bokosile was located there because of the coal field. There's been years of musical chairs about corporate ownership, which has resulted in enormous delays with supply. We now see hundreds of trucks coming out of the site, but all of that raises security costs, indirect costs, diesel, road usage. But you said something very worrying, that you're looking at bringing in more coal on roads when it comes to Eskom. So I'm just concerned that there's all this development and conceptualization, and it's in pilot phase regarding trucks and terminals for the coal to come in by road. But at the same time, you're apparently negotiating with Cerriti. I don't want to put you on the spot and ask if ESCOM is actually negotiating in good faith, but what guarantees can you give this committee that those negotiations are in fact proceeding, that we're not going to see a continuation of delays? I've never been satisfied as to why the contractual delays occurred anyway when the ownership changed from Anglo to Cerriti, because it seems like nothing was inherited at all when it comes to negotiations. So I just need some sort of indication from you that it's not really being used as a red herring, that there is, in fact, a negotiation, and the plan is, as it originally was, that coal field will indeed start supplying coal, and not just piecemeal, but proper amounts of coal to that power station, that we're not actually seeing a situation where there's an expansion of trucking across the country when it comes to coal, because that's going to bring very, very serious problems going forward. So that's really what I want to focus on here. Thank you.
All right. Honourable Lees. number.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Andre, and your team. Andre, you mentioned the debt and the burden that places of 70 billion rand per annum on Eskom. Phakamani Khadebe, in his exit, described Eskom as being in a downward spiral. If you don't get the tariff increase, which you're looking for, and the debt is transferred somehow somewhere else, the 250 billion that's being bandied around, will that make Eskom sustainable from a financial point of view, taking into account the capital expenditure that still has to be made? Then the question of the boiler defects, I'm not sure who is going to, I can't remember which of you guys now are dealing with this, but the boilers were, the design is wrong. I don't see any changes to the boilers here. You're talking about changes to the ash handling, bags more frequent, and so on. I can't remember what slide it's on. So what are we saying? That who's going to pay for this? It was a design fault. What is the long-term cost, really? It seems to me that there's kind of Band-Aid work going to be put on. The real issue will never be dealt with. The design of the boilers is never going to be fixed. Am I reading you wrongly? Please, just give me some more comfort about
slide
that.
Slide 23 and slide 24.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. So you can, if we go to those, there it is. Yeah, so it's the milling plant pulse jet fabric filter, which doesn't exist on Unit 1 at Madupi yet, I don't think. Reheater spray flow. I don't see anything about the boilers, which are 13 meters too short. So some comfort there, please. Then you shut the country's economy down, hopefully not deliberately, because the conveyor at Madupi shut down. There's one conveyor, feeds all six units. What plans are there to make sure that never happens again? If a conveyor goes down, that something keeps the coal feeding into the units. It seems, I mean, I'm not an expert, but I would have thought that when the place was designed, there would be contingency plans put into place to handle it. What is happening about the ash handling on Unit 1 at Madupi? Are we still trucking it out? You talk about the company that was supposed to build it being in financial distress. What, I mean, this is a crisis, and yet you guys talk about it every time we see you, and the costs of pushing that ash out in tankers or whatever way it's going out. Who's paying for it? The consumers are having to pay for it. You guys want higher tariffs for it, or you want bailouts from the state or bailouts from the pension fund. I don't understand why these issues don't get handled very robustly, very quickly, and get fixed. I don't know. I'm pretty naive, I suppose. Andre, I think you're quite correct in being proud of the fact that payments from Soweto increased 25%? That's appalling. I hope you're talking about just the arrears and the current, on current consumption, it's not as low as 25%. If it is, then, Mr. Minister, you and your government need to intervene. I don't know what Eskom can do. But if it's 25% on arrears and current is 80%, well, I think then we're starting to get the right picture. On slide 16, there were three cases. Let me just go there, Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence. Lots of other people have lots of time to talk, so please forgive me if I take a little bit longer than I should. In terms of the referred to other authorities courts, there are three cases that have been closed. Please, please reassure me and all South Africans that those three are in jail. Because at least three people have gone to jail. If not, where are they? What is the situation? Mr. Chairman, I have one last one, but I think it might have been covered by Benedicta. In terms of the coal from New Largo project to automate it, what is the actual cost we're looking at there? It's just a little bit fuzzy to me that you're still kind of negotiating. I mean, this figure that you've given of the cost to completion of Medupi, is that included there, or is that yet to come in? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Right, Honourable Swart.
Thank you, Chair. Very briefly, just next door, the Reserve Bank is giving a submission on the state of our economy. So one of the main issues they've raised is the constraints likely to keep economic growth low, and the electricity availability factor is highlighted by the Reserve Bank. For last year, it was the lowest ever on record electricity availability factor of 66.9%. So we're all in agreement that we're facing a major crisis. It was highlighted in the State of the Nation address. And whilst we are focusing very narrowly on certain of SCOPA's recommendations, myself from Public Enterprises Portfolio Committee found this presentation and submissions very interesting, and I'm grateful for SCOPA's work as well, Chair. Very, very detailed. I wear another hat, and that is in the Justice Portfolio Committee. And Archbishop Makgoba said this should be the year of the orange overalls. And again, we are very concerned that we're not seeing enough people behind bars. And maybe it's not due to ESCOM's fault. You are working with law enforcement agencies. You are doing your very best, Deputy Minister. But it is a great concern to us. And I think Chairman SCOPA called the NPA and SIU before it, and you, in your capacity as chair last year, said more funds should be given to NPA, SIU than to bailouts. And I agree with you. But just then, focusing on ESCOM's, let's set aside the criminal side because that is on in the hands of the SIU and that, but your recovery civilly. Now, in your slide 18, you referred to the 595 million with trillion, and we know on the 6th of February the case was struck from the roll due to the bringing in of SARS, and so it's going to be heard later, and we trust that that money will be recovered. But again, the McKinsey 1.1 billion was recovered largely due to the ESCOM parliamentary inquiry, when McKinsey came and said, they're going to give it back. And it was my insistence, meeting with the board, I said, do something. And eventually the asset forfeiture unit of SARS, of the NPA, went and attached those funds. And I said, now, board, you've got a problem, because that fund is going to the criminal asset recovery. So, Chair, these are some of the issues we would encourage ESCOM to pursue very quickly on to get money back as quickly as possible. Can I just quickly, I know I'm overusing my time here because I'm not a member of this committee, but I think if we work together as committees, public enterprises, justice, SCOPA, we can assist ESCOM largely to address some of these issues. I am appalled at the state of Medupi and Kusile and the fact that we've got these design errors. Absolutely appalled. You're doing your very best to recover. You're doing your very best to look at these design errors. But again, as Mr. Lee said, and that is my question, the boilers seem to have been the main problems, the welding on the board on the boilers. Are we going to have any assurance that once these have been fixed, and yet there's no mention of the boilers, that we are going to have uninterrupted supply? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Mente, we are just googling Goliath, so just humble Chengis Dime.
Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, the first thing I want to talk to is the conclusion of the CEO. The first comment is that their obligations are over 70 billion rand and they will increase. It would make me very happy to know how did we arrive to such amount. What is it for? Because firstly, we need to deal with the, I would say, the balance sheet of Eskom. How much is there? How much do they generate? And what's their operation? Then we will start unpacking and dealing with this shortfall or this total amount of a 70 billion in terms of obligations. One of the areas that affecting Eskom and in terms of wastage of money is on contracts. That is always a dilly-dally factor of you signed a contract, I didn't see it, but gave it a go-ahead. Department of Minerals, you signed contracts. We're liable for payment, and we just have to pay. If we can get that balance sheet and get to narrow it down to where do we spend the money, where do we need it? Then the next thing is, I think towards the end of the year last year, the official which was dealing with coal. You have given us your, I would say, a turnaround strategy on how you're going to handle coal, transport it, ensuring that is you have stockpile and all that. But I assume that those actions started immediately after Scopa left. But just before the end of the year last year, there was a load shedding, unannounced, and we were told coal was wet. So if those actions were already implemented, how did the coal get wet? Who didn't do their monitoring and supervision of ensuring that there is coal available and in a standard that is acceptable for it to generate electricity? On the lifestyle audit, you have your high-risk people, low-risk, or however you mention it, and you've referred some of them to authorities. But with you referring, something has actually told you that, no, something is wrong here, I can't handle it. Why did you feel a need to refer them? Why can't you just do the audit, get all these people and understand how do they live their life? Are they living their life according to the standards you know? Or are they living their lives largely outside the standard that they should be? So something triggered you. What is that trigger? There is also a PSC that all officials must account to in terms of their declarations and interests. Are all your officials doing those declarations to the PSC? Do they all submit them? And that will help you to not have the same situation as you had with Impulse, where a high-ranking official would not declare their interest, and we end up now having to fight at court for someone who have failed to comply with the regulations of the public service. And the contract I'm removing, Ash, that's now having problems. Whose fault was that? Was it a fault of the design, or is that part of the operations from the initial stage? And if it's part of the operations from the initial stage, why are we using a contractor? Because it means then that's our daily duty that we have to do. It's like in Parliament, you will have a cleaner every day, a cleaner must come and clean. If the ash has to be removed for the life of Eskom, why are we using a contractor? Why are we not occupying that space of employing people that must remove the ash and buy the equipment to remove the ash as Eskom, and not having to rely on some private person to do it? Then it hinders the services of Eskom at the end of the day. And then there is 6.22 on the recommendations we made on the substandard work. The first speaker spoke about the defaults on designs and everything, and the official which was dealing with coal also mentioned something about defaults on the work provided by contractors. That's substandard. Who was supposed to have checked and have had to cross all the T's, dot all the I's in order to pass the contract? And what happened to those people? But most importantly, where are those contractors? Did they pay for the damage they caused? Are they blacklisted or removed from Eskom in order for us to get people who can do the proper job? Because we cannot spend a 50 billion on defaults and then go hire another person, the person leaves. And then lastly, Chairperson, in terms of expenditures, but it would have been much nicer if we had already received the expenditure framework of ESCO. How much do IPPs generate into the grid of ESCO? How much do we lose into IPPs? As Eskom, and can you confirm that you want to lay off workers in order to save your balance sheet? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. CEO, I think that South Africans would never be patient with Eskom. If you were talking to South Africans, I don't think that they were going to be patient, because if you are still talking of 18 months load shedding, and in between the 18 months load shedding, you are telling us of boiler design defects and giving us the reason which is why you have shut down Unit 3 at Modupi and 75 days. I think that to South Africans that will just be English, because the reality is that South Africans want to switch on a switch and there must be lights. And the boiler breakages, I think that one you just need to tell us that after Madupi, which other boiler are you going to shut down for another 75 days as well and fix it, because there's a problem around the boiler issues. You must just tell us how to fix it. If you tell us in the report is a design a defect, how long after this one Are you going to shut down another one for 75 days? And last year in March 2019, Eskom had a loss of 2.3 billion and you had an irregular expenditure of 20 billion. So with all these other problems that you have and what you reported last year, I think we have a serious problem somewhere in between, because we sit here, we listen, we look, but like Honorable Ment has said that in between you have wet coal, but then in English you have got such perfect measures on paper that will prevent and how trucks will get there in time. You see me, I'm speaking just like a South African, a community person, because if you are just speaking to anybody there in the RDPs, you can't talk all this that you are talking to us. Us, yes, but umuntu nje ohleli e-RDP, la kuqisha khona ugezi eSoweto every day. Ngiyakuzwisisa lento enikhuluma kola, because kuzobe kuyi-English nje. So meaning it, if I was just a lame community person, I would just expect you to tell me ukuthi ngegibe khona load shedding isikhathi esingaka, 18 months. And then this is just that one. On the other, you are estimating 24 months. It's the 18 months CEO. So it means that me, I can sign down in this diary of mine that and start counting that on the day it says ding 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 18 months, you are not going to have load shedding. Let's Eskom. Because when you say 18 months load shedding and you don't tell us in between that there might be a king, so now you are swearing by the Bible that after this there will be no load shedding. And of course, because of all the nice things you are telling us, how you are going to fix this, how you are going to do that. And I think your weakness at the most with all these things is not giving us time frames. And you are just likening things to another place that you have seen this happening, where you are buying this system, you are doing this, you are doing that. At the end of the day, sifuna ugezi ungahambi, ungaqishi. There must be no wet coals and all these stories here, because it's a long story. And when you talk about dealing with officials and saying that three cases are closed, you have referred this to the SIU in December, so many people have left, and the people that you're allowed to resign when there is trouble. Those people that you allowed to resign when there is trouble, how much trouble was there? Was there money involved? So you gave them their pension, you allowed them to resign after bakangile, we have woman, there's a settlement, you can go, even though you've done wrong. So I just want to understand that those that you gave the option of resigning, what had they done that you thought, Guti, you don't need to pay back or do anything, you can just leave Eskom, we are giving you an option of resigning. And then you are also talking of because for me, you guys must just not be switching off electricity and all these other things. I mentioned what you reported last year on your losses and irregular expenditure and everything else that you do. I would also want to repeat what other members have repeated, that if you can give us in detail what you generate from the IPPs, and the relationships you have with companies on these IPPs, because I think for me it's important there, because ultimately at the end of the day, it's what hits us in the pocket when we buy electricity from you. So you want to understand that when you purchase and you sell back to us, are you not selling back to us at the rate at which you are buying as Eskom? That is just an explanation I need to, you to give us. Thank you, Chair.
Right, Honorable Somia.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks for the report with the identifiable defects which might be followed at some stage. On the area of the coal quality, there is an indication that there are certain measures which are currently observed. I don't know whether that observation is after our visit or it's just an indication of what has been happening, because it was clear when we met with the board and the top management then that indeed the coal quality is a challenge. And as well, it would get into the actual repairs in as far as the boilers are concerned, because the breakages in the boilers, one of the areas which was accounting for that was as well based on the poor quality of that coal. So if we continue in that current form, the problems are going to persist. So meaning, therefore, the boiler maintenance is going to be consistent as we pay less attention to taking in and improving on the coal quality that goes to your plants here and there. The second point, which probably gets into that area as far as our recommendations are concerned, was this fact of controlling the contractual environment in as far as the intake of coal is concerned, which is matching up your penalties that you seemingly on your failure of the intake you ought to pay as much more as you fail to take that quality of coal. So the take or pay clause in your contracts looks like it's more on an admissive angle, that nevertheless you have to pay it, and therefore that's where we're going to stay. So the effort need to be was still consistent of that fact that it's a rip-off if we are going to remain with such contracts, as you are indicating in terms of your page 31 slide, which is indicative of a difficulty to turn around the situation in as far as that contractual engagement is concerned, because you are indicating there that renegotiating the take or pay contract seem as not feasible. Because you are looking into the competitive nature in terms of the price as it gets into that. So can you come back to us, if it's possible, on the actual expenditure in as far as this contractual clause in the coal intake or failure to take that coal in a way, in a loss that is somewhat there? I'm saying so because there's a reference to that the areas of irregular expense, which goes to more than 20 billion rands, and in that instance, how do we seek to balance that kind of a loss factor in as far as the coal is concerned? Because your current plants, they operate based on coal, so the centrality of the quality of coal is very critical, and as well your contractual relationship in as far as that coal intake is concerned. We really need to have something there. The second area for me, Chair, is the actual audit. If then you take care of coal quality that gets into your plants, is it possible that we can have a spreadsheet which indicates on that tabulated audit tray in as far as your the coal quality that gets into your plants, whether that happens at a source or it happens when it reaches the point of somewhat the boiler that had to somewhat be fed with that kind of a coal. So if you could help, because when we went there, there was absolutely no indication that there is an audit in as far as that coal is concerned. Even the auditors themselves confirmed that point. So I'm sure it will be very useful for us, because the major loss goes there, both in terms of the actual production, in terms of generation, and as well in terms of the financial standing of Eskom in as far as the coal use is concerned. And the third point, Chair, which ought to be somewhat observed, is the factor that relates to what Honourable Ment has made reference to. Understandably, the generation challenges pushes us to look further than just Eskom. And one area is on the IPPs. But if you look into the current Eskom take on the IPPs, it's more than 9,000 gigawatt hour, which is the current contractual size of Eskom on the IPP power lines, and that costs probably the range of 222 cents per unit. And in relation to that, you price your sales at about 0.90 cents in as far as your units are concerned. If that is the case, on your sustainability, because that's another point which your board spoke on when we were there, the question of the sustenance vis-a-vis the policy environment, which moves towards the IPP Eskom generation is concerned, is somewhat coming up heavily on the Eskom's ability to finances itself going forward. You spend about 21.3 billion rand at that cost in the year in question. So that alone is indicative of a business that, if things go as such, is somewhat facing its own run towards the losses that it will make. It does not mean that in any event you must come heavy on those who consume, which include the poorest of the poor who are reliant on the Eskom's ability to provide electricity. So in these kinds of figures, in this kind of environment, how could we balance the sustainability factor in a way around this kind of a question, if we're going to move, as it looks like, deeper into the IPP relationship and yourselves to balance up your generation and your ability going up there? Are you still going to continue to pass this cost to your consumers, which is ourselves, our communities, our people who the economy is hitting them hard in as far as the electricity is concerned. So I think that probably those are the kinds of things that we really would want you to look into going forward. Thank you very much, Chair.
All right. So, Honorable Adebe, colleagues, I will remind you that we are short on time, so we will not engage in extra time.
So, do extra time?
We are venturing into that space, so can we... right, Honorable Adebe?
That's fine, Chair. If I'm on extra time, I think I'm partly covered in most of the issues.
Let's cover the issues where you are not covered and leave the ones where you are, because they're already on the table.
I'd like to get an understanding whether or not do you still have your centralized maintenance services. I'm asking this question, Chair, because the CEO spoke about philosophy maintenance in your opening remarks. And when I look at slide 24, Midufi and Kusile outage plan, 18 to 24 months defects. Is that part of your critical component? I'm asking this on the basis that Midufi and Kusile are fairly new plants. And one would have expected, at least when you talk about availability, you look around 90% and 7% planned maintenance and 3% breakdown. Why 18 to 24 months? Hence, I ask the question of centralized maintenance service. Do you still have, which constitute of your well-experienced engineers? And I raised this issue, Chair, earlier on when you spoke about critical skills. My understanding is that ESCOM, when it comes to engineers, tops the list in terms of everyone wants to be part of ESCOM, and the average experience ranges from 10 to 15 years experience of engineers. So I still want to be convinced that indeed you are challenge when it comes to issue of scarce and critical skill. Sitting here, I'm not convinced, Chair. ESCOM has been getting award of best engineers in the country. Those are my 2 cents contribution, Chair, critical to issue of maintenance. 18 to 24 months, that's 2 years of load shedding.
Mam Zibula, you're getting this.
Thank you very much, Chair. I want to say this to ESCOM. They mustn't blame us when we fight like this as the members. It's because the nation is behind us. South Africa is in tatters. It's very hard to explain to the society because they're saying lots of things. We are paying for our lights, for the electricity. Why this is happening? To explain what you're explaining to us, it's very important. It's not that we are undermining you, it's because we are pushed by the society. Chairperson, I'm happy to hear that there is recovery on funds. There is something is showing the light that even if we are owing so much of money, if we can get that money, we can afford to pay on ourselves. Let us make sure that
we get the reports about these recoveries, it's very important to us as the members that we are told about this. Because that's what we wanted, even we said when we were there, we did mention that we want to get the recoveries. Also, I want to echo what my honorable member said about we don't see people going to jail. We don't see them. We want to see people going to jail because of their wrongdoing. This is very important. We can't keep on sitting here and people are planning and they're sitting somewhere. They are planning what they're going to do. So it's very important that we also want to see that happening. SIU, they must do something. Hawks, they must do something. We want to see it. I thank you.
Right. Thank you, Honorable Buthelezi.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Deputy Minister.
Pull your mic. Thanks, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair, Deputy Minister, and colleagues. I've got just two questions, Chair. One relates to the internal investigation. My question is, there are those people who decide to resign because they're investigated. If they do so, do you actually register criminal charges against them so that they are followed through by other agencies, or just let them go like that, including those whom you dismiss as a result of being found guilty of fraud and corruption? That's my first question. Secondly, you spoke to the fact that those whom you targeted for lifestyle audit went through the process, amounting to 370 of them. Of those, how many were high risk? Thank you.
All right, colleagues. As I said, we're going to enter into extra time. It's 10 to 1. We were scheduled to finish at 1, but I think the matters are grave. So what I'll do is see, oh, it's 10 to now. We have a long list of questions here. I'm not going to field them. I'm not going to put them out there, except for two. One, insofar as the issues of tampering with coal is concerned, that were spoken about the trucks. Where does that end? If you've been found to have been tampering, do we continue making use of your services? Because obviously something has got to give. There has to be consequence. To correct the anomaly is one thing, but do you continue engaging with that kind of service provider insofar as services are concerned? I would hope that in writing we receive the hardships rather which are cited insofar as CBZ is concerned. I think those must be explained. What hardships are we speaking about there? Are they financial? Is it resources? Is it skills? Is it expertise? What is it? And I was trying to follow the annual report. Item 6.5 of our report says, vetting of all supply chain practitioners, managers, and the board must be implemented immediately, and for head office as well as other centers where procurement takes place, and the report must be sent to SCOPA within 60 days from the adoption of this report by the National Assembly. That 60 days would have lapsed on the 18th of January. Today is the 91st day, so we'd like to know, has that happened? So that even the executives that are here themselves can indicate before they leave whether they've been vetted, because we're not going to let go of that, because it's a cabinet resolution of 2014. And part of the things is to hold the executive committed to its own resolutions, and that includes, therefore, government departments and entities implementing decisions. So I would really want to know, before we leave today, the executives here themselves must indicate to us, and
CEO, today is the 91st day. I would like that report submitted next week in writing because the 60 days expired on the 18th of January. Right. So what I will do, CEO, your team, to be very pointed, succinct, that will no more than 5 minutes from each person responding. So nshaying a sog, my daughter. Ne boy is quiet. Nshaying a sog. Then get spawn. Then get will take. Yeah. So get we should not be here for more than 25 minutes max. And then DM will come to you, and then I will make proposals, colleagues, on how we tie all of this down for movement. Yeah.
With due respect, I don't want to be seen as if I'm undermining your authority. I do not think they will be doing justice. Unless I'm proven otherwise. How about we then propose that they give us a written reply and appear again with the board, because we don't want now also on our side to be found wanting as if we're doing malicious complaint. We've asked a lot of critical questions that deserve substantive answers. So my proposal to you, Chair, with due respect,
written responses.
Yes,
okay.
With their board.
Okay, send cover, no. Yes, you are all covered. Alright, we'll do this. I'm seeing this outside caucus there playing. Now what we'll do is, Ben has been taking meticulous notes here of all the issues, but I think it's important that we get preliminary responses to get a sense of to where things are. When I said I'll propose a roadmap, it will come to that. There's a proposal that I have. So let's hear the reaction to the issues that have been raised, where they are, we feel that the further responses must be given, so that we get their sense of thinking as well. So that proposal is sustained, written responses will follow, but I think abalinikwe ithuba lokuphendula. Fair compromise? Agreed to.
No, agreed to. Perhaps the CEO and the Deputy Minister on the chair. So that we, because Mr. Uteta
Xalogunye. Okay. All right. Let's hear the CEO.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members, for those questions and remarks. Let me, and I hope I've captured all of the questions, and I'll try my best to respond to them. Honourable Member von Manen.
CEO, let's do this. Give us a global response, because I'm worried that the SONA debate starts at 2, and I know that it's a three-line whip, so we don't want to be found wanting with the whippery. So cover the salient points, and then written responses will follow, and then we'll engage with those, and then I will detail the way forward on how we tie it all down, so that we don't rob you of the opportunity to explain yourself sufficiently. Right, over to you.
Right, thanks for that guidance, Honourable Chairman. We agree that the control environment needs to be significantly improved, and that the tendency of expansions, deviations, modifications, that needs to stop. A lot of these expansions and modifications are related to the lapse of time. So there is a significant effluxion of time, as the lawyers call it, and that leads to these contracts being modified. So a lot of it has to do with how quickly can we bring these contracts to bear. Dan, I think, has explained some of the interim options relating to New Largo Mine. The intention is not for us to put more coal on road. I think with respect, we misspoke there. The intention is to put more coal on rail, and hence we are working with Transnet on the concept of an inland coal terminal where we will have far better control over the delivery of coal, both from a measurement perspective in terms of quality and weight, instead of having up to 4,000 trucks arriving per day at a power station, which is an extremely difficult situation to control.
Moving on to the debt burden that was raised, if we take five steps back and we look at the situation in which Eskom finds itself, the notion that we were able to pursue three very large mega projects, Medupi, Kusile and Angula, with tariff increases being capped at CPI, puts us in a position where inevitably we had to take on significant debt onto our balance sheet. And this debt has been exacerbated by corruption, delays, and so forth. But the very concept of being able to pursue these mega projects without a substantial equity injection into Eskom, I think, is not a sustainable business model. So at some stage, unfortunately, the money's got to come from somewhere, whether it comes from a tariff increase or whether it comes through an equity injection. It does not disappear, and in fact, it creates a very significant risk, as I'm sure the honourable members know better than I do, to the sovereign. So the issue of Eskom debt has to be addressed in order to make us sustainable. The changes to the boilers, I think we need to distinguish here between Medupi and Kusile boilers and the boilers that operate at our existing power station. So on the new builds, what we're doing, one by one, we are taking the units offline. We are raising the height of the boilers by about 12.5 meters. The idea behind that is to reduce the exhaust temperature, which is currently sitting at 128 degrees. That is too high. It damages the downstream emission control equipment, and therefore we cannot operate the unit at full capacity. So also addressing a question about the scheduling, that is why we have to take these units offline sequentially, one by one, and literally raise the height of the boiler, fix, and we're not only fixing the boiler height, we're also fixing coal milling and coal handling infrastructure at the same time. One of the key challenges that we've got is where we have single points of failure, and the conveyor belts are included in that, and we need to make sure that we mitigate those risks by building in various redundancies, but also by building in additional storage capacity to help us to buy time in the event that there is a conveyor failure. I was recently at Medupi myself. I inspected the entire length of the conveyor system, and I'm comfortable that we now have measures in place, particularly after the completion of expansion of our bunkering system in the power station, that we will have sufficient capacity to avoid a failure like we had when we had the damage to the conveyor at Medupi. On the ash handling, I think that's a very important point. It costs us a significant amount of money to handle this, and there is a 100 million rand capex that we need to spend in order to address this issue and to stop using contractors to perform this work for us. And that will then put us in a position to stop spending the money, which is approximately 17 million rand per month, on this contract to handle the ash. So there's a strong business case, and we are expediting that particular contract. On Soweto debt, yes, we have a long way to go. The problem is by no means solved, but we have seen 100% improvement on the previous rate. So I guess that is progress. But we do need to work very hard on establishing a culture of payment for services that are rendered. We cannot, unfortunately, afford to supply electricity at no charge. When a service is supplied, payment has to be made. And we are therefore moving into Soweto, and we are disconnecting areas where payment rates are between 0 and 30%. We understand that this inconveniences some customers who do pay, but we really don't have an alternative if we want to stop supplying electricity free of charge, because that ends up putting us in a position where we are financially compromised
And I'm sure the honourable members all understand that this is a very difficult position that we find ourselves in. I sense, honourable chairperson, that there is a lot of anger and also frustration amongst the members about speed or lack thereof in the law enforcement processes. We are working very closely with all of the law enforcement agencies. Unfortunately, the wheels of justice grind very slowly, and the processes take a long time. But we are expediting our efforts to also pursue the people that have misappropriated funds through the civil courts. Now, that has two benefits. First of all, the proceeds thus recovered accrue to us, and they don't go to the asset forfeiture unit. So from a selfish point of view, that's good for us. But then also secondly, in the civil courts, as the lawyers in the room will know, the burden of proof is considerably lower. And it's therefore an easier case to be made, and we believe we can accelerate those efforts. We are fully aware of the fact that the low energy availability factor is a constraint on growth, and hence the impetus to fix our generation system. If we don't fix the generation system, unfortunately, we will continue to be a brake on the system. The design errors at Medupi, I think I spoke to that. We are working to fix them. It does take time. It is a very unsatisfactory situation that we find ourselves with new plant with inherent design defects. That is extremely frustrating, but that is where we are, and the way forward now is to go ahead and fix them, while at the same time seeking to recover damages from the contractors involved in these design defects in the first instance. The Honourable Menti spoke about the debt service obligations, which are 70 billion rand per annum, which is a very considerable amount. It puts a huge burden on our income statement. And as I said earlier, what we therefore have to do is either to solve the debt through an equity injection or through a tariff increase or through higher sales. Now, we would like to have higher sales, but then we have to have the megawatts available for us to sell. In order to have the megawatts available to sell, we have to fix our plant, and the economy needs to grow. So it is a bit of a chicken and egg situation in that we are a constraint, but once the plant is fixed and electricity is available, hopefully the brakes can be released and we can move on. The load shedding due to wet coal, we will address that in detail in our written response, if you don't mind. And on the lifestyle audits, yes, we absolutely need to accelerate that and make that applicable to all employees in high-risk areas so that we can understand when somebody visibly lives above his or her means that they are brought to book. But I also have to stress that people are clever, and they make a very strong case, or they make our lives difficult by moving assets around, by doing business in their cousin's name or through a spouse or through a friend. So it's very difficult to always securely track all of these people who would seek to enrich themselves at our expense. The IPPs, again, a very important matter and also raised by the Honourable Somyo. Here I would say that it is very important that in the rollout of the new IPP program, that Eskom, as the ultimate buyer of the electricity produced by the IPPs, be involved in the negotiation of the commercial terms. It is very important to us that we understand both the quantum and the cost of what is being contracted on our behalf
So we are engaging with the IPP office, which is a office reporting into the DMRE, with a view to being involved in this process right from the outset. Where it is appropriate, we will be looking at existing IPP contracts to understand what the cost implications are of those. Some of them, particularly in bid window 1 and 2, were negotiated at quite favorable rates for the IPPs, and it's good that we look at those contracts and that we understand what the mechanisms are by which we can reduce the cost of electricity, not only for Eskom, but obviously also eventually for the entire country. The Honourable Swartz, I agree that South Africans are no longer patient. I completely get that, and that is why we are accelerating our efforts to fix our plant. We have brought on board experienced project managers. It is not only, if I can speak to the Honourable Khadebe's point on skills, it is not only engineers that you need. You also need plant operators. You also need technicians and artisans. And you also need project managers. And project management in particular is a skill that I think has been, shall I say, neglected by Eskom. We've got very good engineers, but the project managers to make sure that the engineers work effectively, that is a skill that we've lost, and we've now brought on a team of project managers that will help us drive this process so that we've got greater predictability of outcomes when we start to do, and we have already started, when we carry out this maintenance program. So the first of these engineers will already start early next month.
Yes.
So they understand the work and they understand project. So that is very important. Chair, please interrupt me if I'm overstaying my welcome.
No, I will let you know, but I thought you were doing well to bring it all together, and then we will. Yeah, I think there's merit to Honourable Hadebe's that we will let you speak. The other responses will follow, so you can round up and then we'll hand over to the DM. But we will want to each the questions, the written responses to each one. But I thought it was important that we get the reaction of Eskom on the issues you had raised.
The Honourable Swartz are asking Eskom to commit to a maximum of 18 months before we've fixed all our plants. We are certainly going to try our best to make that happen. We are under significant constraints in order to balance taking units off at the same time as repairing those units. And in the past, as you will know, we have not covered ourselves in glory when it has come to taking units off and returning them on time, number one. But when we return them and we start them up, that they actually perform as they are supposed to. And we have, in the past, not had a good track record on that. We have learned from our mistakes, and we need to improve on that. And that is why we're building these teams, these multidisciplinary teams that hopefully can give us the better outcome. But again, Mr. Nkomalo has made it very clear that he understands the nature of the challenge and he's up to it.
As you conclude.
Thank you. Right. Just on coal quality and also, Honourable Chair, to the comment that you've made, coal quality does have an impact on boiler performance, particularly if there are foreign matter or if there is foreign matter contained in the coal. We find very strange things in the coal, lumps of steel and so forth, and that damages the mills. So that's the first instance. The second instance is that where the coal is very abrasive, you effectively sandblast away at your boiler tubes. And that causes the boiler tubes, and here I exclude the new build, this is in our existing power stations, they cause boiler tube leaks, which is a significant part of our reliability challenges. And as Dan has indicated, we have a challenge at this point in time with the transport leg between mine and power station. where people stop in the dead of night and transfer coal between trucks and do interesting things, again, to take advantage of Eskom, so that what we get delivered is not the coal that we bought at the mine. And the tamper-proof seal that Dan spoke about, that is intended to ensure that there is a watertight chain of custody between the mine and the plot. And once we roll that out with appropriate sampling points, we will be able to get control over those issues. Now, as Dan indicated, once you are found to have been involved in these activities, your supplies are suspended and you are caught, called to a meeting at Eskom, and until such time as you have not provided Eskom with sufficient reassurance that these matters are addressed, you may not continue your supply. So there are consequences and interventions.
Okay. All right. Colleagues, your questions are very detailed. They will require further input, but I think the CEO has given an executive summary which places us somewhere. I will request, CEO, that the responses to the questions in writing reach us by next week, Wednesday, at close of business, so that members can have time to study them, because we are still to interrogate your finances in any case, your financials. We've not looked at those. Colleagues, in the draft program that we'll be circulating to you for your comments, provisionally on the 4th of March, we have got the IMC on Eskom debt. As you'll recall, we had Department of Public Works here, and they threw a spanner in the works. So we are proposing that on the 4th of March, we have that meeting with all those stakeholders. Eskom is part of them. So because Eskom will be present on that day, I propose that we meet with Eskom at 6 o'clock in the evening of the 4th, so that they do not have to come in and out and then come in and out. So the responses will help us to, on that day, Absol, you will be first off the bat with expansions and deviations. So we dispense with that matter. We go to the responses of Eskom, and then we will then engage in the hearing of the Eskom matters, so that we then bring Eskom issues to a logical conclusion. The only issue, colleagues, we will ask us to, Eskom will give us, of course, an update on investigations, understanding that we had set the deadline of the 31st of March, but it will be good to see how far they are in that regard. The next week issue is that it must also include about vetting, because we that other people here vetted. As you are seated there, you vetted. Okay, into the record, if you can just tell us exactly about everyone that's here.
My name is Bartlett here. I confirm I've been vetted, Chair.
Right.
My name is Peggy Numalo. I've also submitted my vetting to SSA.
Okay.
My name is Odish Tangan. I can confirm that I have been vetted.
Dan Mashiko, I have not been vetted yet.
You've not been vetted. All right. CEO?
Honorable Chair, nor have I.
All right, so we will push on that, but the Minister of State Security arrived here, and it was 101 persons, and how many had complied? 10. Yeah, so we are not letting off the foot of the pedal on that one. So if that can be finalized. In the questions for next week, if we can be answered, is Medupi and Gusile viable, practical, and realistic to continue with? If that can be responded, what are the opportunity costs?
I will come to you at DM, and then you will have an opportunity to close. I want to say that, colleagues, oh, and whether we are settled with load shedding for the next 18 months. I think that clarity must be given unambiguously. Yeah. So, yeah, that must be given to us. All I want to say in conclusion, and I hand over to that DM, is that we are not patient with the problem of load shedding and the issue of the inability to implement decisions and to be committed to your own commitments. But you can be rest assured of our patience in holding you to account. We have got no problem calling you in as and when is required. I want to reiterate, the absence of the board today speaks to an institution that has got very little regard to oversight and accountability, and one which is hell-bent in one way or the other to undermining this parliament. It is inexcusable, it is unacceptable, and it smacks of arrogance, to say the least. And we will raise it sharply with the board themselves. But what I want to say, DM, is that clearly the problems at ESCOM in large part sit with the board. When you had a CEO / chairperson resign, my expectation was that was not a personal pronouncement that was made to the president insofar as load shedding was concerned. It was a board comment or assurance that there would be no load shedding, and there was. Which then means that the whole board should have resigned. It is inexcusable that certain individuals chose to remain, as if we are dealing with, unless we are, with decisions being taken in silos and a board that is not working as a team. And the ripple effect of that is what we have seen today. Because if Mr. Mabuza resigned on the basis of the commitment that there would be no load shedding, that was not his personal commitment. It was a board commitment. And wholesale removal of the board should have been warranted if the matter was that serious, including but not limited to the role of the executive as well, as to what role they played in making the kind of commitment which was made and came and brought all of us into serious darkness and trouble. Even from an optics and perceptions point of view, it just didn't look good for the president to come back all the way from Egypt, get here and is given commitments. He assures the nation and the world and the investors and the tourists who would have been coming to South Africa. Surely that even the board itself would have had to have received a technical report, which would have come from the executives. So all of you are still not off the hook until we get to the bottom of the decision-making processes which are being followed at ESCOM. So, colleagues, we'll see you on the 4th. DM, I'll hand over to you, and then we are good to go.
Sorry, Chair.
Yes.
But, Chair, I just want the DM to also touch on the constitutionality aspect of the comment made on the Soweto residents and switching off of electricity.
Okay.
Because it then renders the policy of 2003 on electricity basic services. If people will just have wake up with lights off on the basis of certain individuals owing.
All right. Okay. I know that another municipality has been served notice somewhere. So there are those issues, but then there are issues for the 4th because we are dealing with the IMC and the ESCOM debt and the consequences. But colleagues will receive the draft program this afternoon. DM, over to you.
No, thank you, Chair. I I thought I was already deferring to you to close the meeting as you are chairing, because the temptation is to want to go back and deal with a lot of, but I'm very sensitive to the fact that we all have 14 hours to attend for the sitting. Chair, I was more inclined to your earlier proposal. You seem to have gotten rid of it in your latter comments, so as to remove any misunderstanding downstream. I have no doubt about the recording capabilities of the team here in terms of taking note of all the questions. But if we come to another meeting and then there is a sense that not all the questions have been answered to, or has been, it would be better that there would be a minute that would come from your side. I think you do have a competent table staff here that would have really minuted all those questions so that there is a comparison of notes, so that they don't respond only to those that they have recorded and probably missed out certain things. It's going to create us a problem, and then support that then the next engagement on the basis of that takes place with the board in attendance. I have taken note of your comments also about the phenomenon of interim boards. I'll take it back to the ministry so that it's a matter that is engaged for decision, so that there's clarity in that respect. Thank you, Chair.
No, I think we will send through the questions that is agreeable, so that we do as the comparison. I think members will have time to look at the responses next week, because we've got time in between the then and the fourth, and if there is anything missing further, we will communicate so that it's done. So I think there will be constant communication. So I think, colleagues, we can leave it at that. Tomorrow we are meeting with SAA in this venue at 9 o'clock. It is a joint meeting with the PC on public enterprises. And I had hoped that we can have a mini conversation. There's just one question I need to ask members insofar as that meeting is concerned. So from our side, to you, Deputy Minister, to the team at ESCOM CEO, and to the ministry and all the stakeholders, the meeting stands adjourned. Thank you very much.